It is in part based on what is believed to have been a successful crackdown in Denmark.
Denmark's new migration policies have driven down successful asylum claims to a 40-year low. So can Labour start to make gains with the help of the Danes? I'm LBC's Henry Riley, reporting from Copenhagen.
In other news, I'll sue you and I'll see you in court, President Trump.
We'll sue them for anywhere between $1 billion and $5 billion, probably sometime next week. Well, I think I have to do it. I mean, they've even admitted that they cheated.
Plus, how climate change anxiety could fuel the use of drugs or drug use. And you remember the story of Jim, our veteran of Afghanistan. We can give you that full update, which perhaps will lift the mood a bit. 7 o'clock news on LBC. Here's next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the Home Secretary is due to set out sweeping reforms to the UK's asylum system later. Shabana Mahmood is planning to change human rights laws to make the deportation of illegal migrants easier. People will also have to wait 20 years before they can apply to settle in the UK permanently. But Enver Solomon is from the Refugee Council and thinks people won't be deterred from trying to reach the UK.
They can because they can speak English, because of our historical connections with different parts of the world, because already we have diaspora communities here, and because they might have family members here. The government is not thinking this through clearly. It's not focusing on solutions which could make a difference.
President Trump has urged House Republicans to vote and release government files relating to Jeffrey Epstein. He'd previously blocked their publication, but in a surprise U-turn overnight, Mr. Trump says his party has nothing to hide. Mr. Trump's come under pressure from his own party to make all the documents relating to the late sex offender public. A strike by resident doctors in England is heading into a new week with no clear sign of an immediate resolution. The five-day action over pay started on Friday. A couple arrested after criticising their daughter's primary school in a WhatsApp group say Hertfordshire police have paid them £20,000 in damages. Rosalind Levine and Maxie Allen were held on suspicion of harassment and malicious communications in January. The couple say police have since admitted liability for wrongful arrest and detention. Technology developed for Formula One cars is to be used to try and improve Wi-Fi on trains. Great Western Railway is understood to be running a pilot scheme on some of its routes. Financial analyst at AJ Bell, Danny Hewson's got more details.
One of the trains is in the process of having this trial. So it will use signals from both mobile phone masts and also low Earth orbit satellites with a clever bit of tech which has been developed by Motion Applied, a UK tech company. And that is being trialled to see if it gets rid of that really tricky moment where you lose connection.
And a cold weather health warning comes into force this morning for much of the northern half of England. Snow and ice are possible for some of this week. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 96.98. It closed down 109 on Friday. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, dry and chilly for most. Some light rain for northern Scotland with a high today of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
On a windswept walk in Carmarthen, while someone tries to use your card details to hire a speedboat in Cannes, this is the moment you relax, knowing that Barclays Advanced Tech has helped to spot the fraud in under a second, and their expert team are on hand to close it down. So you can get back to being windswept. Oh! Just one of the ways we're protecting our customers 24/7. Search Barclays Fraud Protection. Barclays. Make money work for you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after seven on Monday, the 17th of November. Describing it as a moral mission to end the crossings and save the asylum system, the Home Secretary is on the march. Take back migrants or face visa ban is just one punchy headline. We'll give you full details on that. And, of course, we've been to Denmark, as you heard just before the news there. We've been to Denmark, which apparently is a great success, to find out what they know and we don't. In other news, you will remember from last week the story of Jim, the veteran who served in Afghanistan.
Op Fortitude has been under the LBC spotlight for a week. And finally, something good to report. I'm LBC's Andy Ballantyne with the latest.
What do we make of the headline? Climate change anxiety could fuel drug use, so a watchdog warns. Psychotherapist Caroline Hickman is with the Climate and Psychology Alliance. She explains why people are feeling anxious about climate change.
People have got much more strong anxiety where there is this breakdown of trust. And they are not reassured because they're not seeing action.
Why we'll all have concerns, of course. Is it more among the young, and would you really turn to using drugs? And it looks like a court date could be on. Donald Trump not backing down over that panorama and the treatment of the BBC generally. Former director of the BBC, Tony now Lord Hall, an interesting choice, says the corporation should not use licence fees pay's money to pay off President Trump.
I don't think we should agree to any money being paid to Donald Trump. You know, you're talking about licence fee payers' money. You're talking about public money. It would not be appropriate.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As anticipated, a potential crackdown, a slew of headlines, which I'm sure will delight everyone at Number 10 and at the Home Office, but there seems to be quite a battle on their hands. Now, the Home Secretary's report, the Home Secretary reportedly has been influenced by Denmark, and we have sent Henry Ryan. I know you heard him on the radio just now, but he spent the weekend in Denmark, and he'll file a report on exactly what they've worked there. But let's stay with the UK first and get the story behind the headlines. What is the Home Secretary attempting to achieve? LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, joins me in the studio. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, a huge shake-up of the immigration system being revealed today by Shabana Mahmood. She wants to make it easier to deport people who are illegally here or don't have the rights to stay. Asylum seekers will have to wait 20 years before they can stay permanently. That's quadrupled from now. Refugee status is only going to be temporary and will be revoked. There will be Danish-style family restrictions on reunions. Weekly allowances will be revoked for those who can work and don't. And countries which don't take back foreign criminals will have their visa allocations restricted in a Donald Trump-style move. Angola, Namibia and the Democratic Republic of Congo could face action, we are told. Illegal migrants will also be restricted to one single legal route and one attempt to challenge that with little and fast-tracking cases with little chance of success. Family connections will only mean parents and children, not other family connections. The Home Secretary, speaking yesterday, said that immigration is tearing the country apart and is out of control.
It is an issue that is dividing our country, and I see this polarisation all over the country, including in my own constituency. We have a system that is out of control, it's unfair, and it's putting huge pressure on communities. So it is important that we restore order and control to this system so that we can retain public permission and public confidence in having an asylum system at all. And that is what my reforms are designed to do.
But Nick, this is going to be the very controversial part. As I told you last week, Mahmood is also going to reform and tweak parts of the ECHR and the Modern Slavery Act. They will bring forward new laws to reset the balance between an individual and the public interest under Article 8, the so-called right to family life. The government also want to reform Article 3, that's the right to freedom from torture or degrading treatment. They say they will do that with other international partners, so we won't do that unilaterally. However, the Tories say that there's still no real deterrent, that scrapping Rwanda has led to an increase in channel crossings.
They're a combination of a few small steps in the right direction and a handful of gimmicks. If they really wanted to fix the illegal migration crisis, the government would follow our advice, follow our plans, come out of the ECHR completely, and that would enable the government to deport all illegal immigrants within a week of arrival.
Now, will it work? Of course, who knows? But this is a very tough talk from a tough Home Secretary. This is way, way further than I think many things even the Tories have ever done before. So naturally, there is a backlash in some areas. That Article 3 and Article 8 changes will require legislation. There are lots of talk behind the scenes between Labour MPs who are deeply uncomfortable with some of these moves, and they have to vote it through, Nick, in the House of Commons. So watch this space. Nadia Whittam, the member for Nottingham East, accused the government of pursuing policies of the far right. And finally, Nick, of course, we have to see this through the prism of the past few weeks. Struggles in Sir Keir Starmer's leadership. People say that Shabana Mahmood may be a future prime minister, maybe a future leader. This might be the tough action that the public want, but it's far from what many Labour MPs want. She knows that she will know that if things do change rapidly in the next few years or months, she might be having to do far more than just trying to stop the boats.
Natasha Clark is LBC's political editor. In a moment, I'll be asking you, do you think it can work specifically with, if the United Kingdom stays in the ECHR, European Convention of Human Rights? It would seem to be a bit of a challenge. Now, both Natasha and I have referenced Denmark, and over there, the Labour's effectively sister party, the centre-left Social Democratic Party, has toughened up the country's immigration system with some degree of success, the number of claims in the country reaching a 40-year low. Now, the government recently sent a team to Denmark, so we decided to send LBC's Henry Riley. He spent the weekend in Copenhagen to investigate.
They need to adjust to the way of living here in Denmark. Like, if we go to other countries, we're going to adapt to their way of living.
Consistently ranked as one of the happiest countries in the world, Denmark is the birthplace of Hans Christian Andersen, where Lego was first built, Carlsberg first brewed. But it's their approach to migration which has got European leaders talking.
It has become much more accepted that we have a very hardline stance on immigration.
Successful asylum claims here are at a 40-year low, just 860 last year, while applications are down 90% in a decade. The Home Secretary dispatched senior UK government officials to Copenhagen, so we've come to find out if Labour can make gains with the help of the Danes.
Got more under control in the recent years. If there's a good reason for immigrating, there's still a chance to do that.
I think that we should be kinder. I think that we are too harsh on the people who end up in crime.
Denmark's cuddly image may just be a Scandinavian cliche. This country has among the most stringent migration policies on the continent. Nilas Heinskau is the political editor of the Danish broadsheet Politiken.
The Social Democratic Party had a lot of problems losing voters to the Danish People's Party, which is very comparable to Reform UK. They took voters for what would be comparable to Red Wall voters. They made a decision in the Social Democratic Party not to let that happen again.
By tackling migration, Labour's sister party here have mitigated that threat. While successful, aspects have been controversial. We spoke with broadcaster Anne-Sophie Allard.
We said that we would take the jewellery and other valuables off refugees if they would come, just to pay for their housing. So we also attract negative attention.
For some, it's necessary for integration, but for others, it's discrimination. Nilas Heinskau again.
The ghetto law, which is now being called the parallel society law, where you would have a limit of how many immigrants with non-Western background would be able to live in a certain area, and they tore down buildings.
Just a 10-minute metro from the centre is a sprawling housing estate, Mjørnaparken, one of these parallel societies, and it's worlds away from the city centre. Christian lives here.
It's been transformed. Years ago, it was, you know, a hard area to live. You know, it's been an area with gangs, members, to a much more positive place to be around. It's still a very diverse place to be, which is fantastic.
Officials, though, say the big deterrent is the temporary nature of asylum here. You'll be returned to your home country if it's deemed safe, and only under certain circumstances can you bring family. If they're over 24, they must pass a Danish language test, and the refugee not have claimed benefits for 3 years. 95% of asylum claimants are immediately deported. They're held in immigration removal centres. The largest is the former army barracks, Back, the detention centre. We spoke outside with Rima, a Red Cross volunteer.
There is school there, there is like a nice cafeteria, big cafeteria, they got a lot of options there, so okay. I mean, of course, it's probably different if you live there. There is a children's centre there, so we're going to have activities with them.
By being tough on asylum, the centre-left government here have been allowed to focus on other policies, some political respites, which would be very welcome in Downing Street.
It works because it's of course important to have attention to how do we welcome people into our society? What do they need? How do we want them to be?
Yeah, I think you should try to get a job.
If people want to live in Denmark, they try to learn Danish.
And so some Danish folk there, concluding Henry Reiner's report from Copenhagen. Now, Henry obviously flew back on the weekend because you heard him earlier this morning here on LBC. And anyway, I just want to reference what I heard you talking about. Look, the headlines, take back migrants or face visa ban. I think you referenced that one. Most sweeping reforms in a generation. But my interpretation, you're closer to it than I, this will live or die in the ECA, the European Convention on Human Rights, won't it? Henry, morning to you.
It will. Morning, Nick. And I think they're really relying on that Danish model because they've managed to do it within the ECHR. So the government's hoping by some of these sort of changes that they've made in Denmark, for instance, the temporary nature of granting people asylum, you'll be able to, in some ways, bypass the ECHR. But also, I think it's taking inspiration from that country in terms of how they eliminate that pull factor. So, for instance, I know this morning, Nick, I'd tell you that the government are going to launch a set of TV and radio and even newspaper ads in Middle Eastern and North African countries, similar to what they've done in Denmark, to basically tell people living there of these new strict policies and make the point that the word they use, the source within Labour, your golden ticket is no longer valid.
And what of opposition in Denmark? I know you touched on that briefly, that we will see, well, it is predicted, we'll see extraordinary opposition, not least from some of our own party here in the UK, Henry.
Well, and they've got elections, actually, tomorrow, funny enough, in Denmark, and this is an issue that still comes up. It's their local elections. But the difference is, Labour's a broad church here, whereas there it's a proportional system, very small parties, and if you don't like what the Social Democrats are doing, you go somewhere else. But they're Labour's sister party. But what's interesting, Nick, virtually no opposition. I mean, some of the opposition MPs are uncomfortable with the policy. They want to see it loosened, but there's no major opposition. It's very much the political consensus over there.
All right. Henry Riley reporting. Thanks for that. We will come to your reaction, of course. Is it going to work, particularly with how it is pushed, how it has been dealt with, I should say, with the European Convention of Human Rights? We'll also hear from someone, a researcher at the Migration Observatory. And also coming up, the other side of the news, I'll see you and I'll sue you in court. President Trump's message to the BBC. 7:15, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Plans to fast-track the removal of dangerous criminals will form part of major asylum reforms due to be set out by the Home Secretary. President Trump's urged House Republicans to vote to release government files relating to the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. And a couple who were arrested after criticising their daughter's primary school in a WhatsApp group say Hertfordshire police have paid them £20,000 in damages. LBC weather, dry and chilly for most, light rain for northern Scotland, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. On the M25, anti-clockwise, the right-hand Dartford Tunnel is closed for emergency repairs, so it's down to two lanes, and there are severe delays with queues from Junction 3 for the M20. There are also queues on the M25 anti-clockwise because of an accident between Junction 25 for Enfield and Junction 24 for Potters Bar, where one lane is closed. There are also long delays on the M25 clockwise. One lane is closed after Junction 9 for Leatherhead because of an accident. It is slow in Greenwich. Pear Tree Way is blocked in both directions between Bugsby's Way and the Woolwich Road flyover because of an accident. On the Tube, on the Northern Line, Angel Station is exit only. That's because of some problems with the escalators. And some bus routes in West, Northwest and Southwest London are disrupted today. That's because of a strike.
LBC.
Looking for love? Find your soulmate at our Fall in Love with a Ford test drive event this November. From our dependable Ford Kuga plug-in hybrid to the adventurous all-electric Explorer and from the rebellious all-electric Capri to the stylish Ford Puma. We've got the perfect partner for you. And we'll also give you a further £500 off if you complete a test drive between the 14th and the 24th and order by the 30th of November. Fall in love with a Ford today. Book a test drive online. Only at participating Ford dealers. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. This is LBC. Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey... From sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello, and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 7, I'll do the headlines in 1 minute. You already heard some of them. It is the Take Back the Migrants is the Daily Telegraph. Lawyers and Labour MPs to torpedo Mahmood plan is the Daily Mail. First states face visa ban in migrant returns push. What does that mean? Well, if their people keep coming here effectively, the countries, they won't be given visas. It's pretty tough stuff. The Guardian saying it's the most sweeping reforms in a generation. The LBC app also has that story. They've made it more punchy, their headline. We have removed your golden ticket. Illegal migrants to be told. The government will launch a marketing blitz abroad. I should tell you, also, when you look around the websites, it really is the story of the day. There we are on the Independent website as well. Labour to ramp up deportations by overriding ECHR. Overriding rather than quitting. Well, let's put that to Dr. Mina Kaibubis, who is a researcher at the Migration Observatory at the University of London, focusing on issues related to unauthorised migration, and joining me now. Doctor, thanks for coming on. This would appear to be, if I use the expression, the elephant in the room is the convention. How do you see it working alongside the, what we understand to be the details of the Home Secretary's plan? Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. A lot is going to ride upon what exactly the details of this policy will be. We'll find out more about the implementation tomorrow. But of course, on the legal side, the government will be hoping that basing this on the Danish model that has been in operation for quite some time, where the ECHR is still in place, the government will be hoping that any barriers to the implementation of their plans will be minimal.
But Doctor, how much do you share that level of confidence?
Again, it's very hard to say until we see further details later tomorrow. What is to be expected is that there will probably be some legal challenges, and we're expecting to see the government battle that out in court when it comes to it.
So we've looked at Denmark. Is there another European country? Is there anywhere else in the world that might give us some pointers for this?
So when we look at this package of measures as a whole, Denmark seems to be the only comparable place in Europe. In some ways, the package that the Home Secretary is looking to introduce today is tougher than the Danish model. So we're looking at the 20-year wait here in the UK compared to an 8-year wait for most refugees in Denmark. So even though the model is inspired, the Home Secretary seems willing to go further in some respect.
Lastly, some of the challenges that the Home Secretary will face, they'll probably suggest that this is like reform light or a pound shop reform UK policy. How do you respond to that?
I think there's a big difference in terms of the implementation of some of these measures. So we're looking at a series of relatively tough measures, but are still quite technical, quite detailed, and that contrasts with some of the plans that we've seen from the other parties. The question, of course, is how is it going to work in practice?
Grateful for your time this morning. Thank you, Dr. Mina Kaibubis, who's researcher at the Migration Observatory at the University of Oxford, 22 after 7. Steve's in Guildford. Steve, is it going to work? Yes or no, and why? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. No, it's a lame-duck government. It won't work. It's just rhetoric. Their own party won't allow this, and this is a problem with our government. It's not governing.
Wouldn't that be even more embarrassing, Steve? And by the way, I do think yours is a very fair observation. If they can't even get it past their own MPs, also similar, of course, to the welfare reform, isn't that even more embarrassing for them, Steve?
Well, it's been an embarrassment since day one, because at the end of the day, all they're doing, they're not governing, they're reacting to polls. And it's ridiculous, because once this gets thrown out, Starmer is positioned, her position, Mahmood's position, it's going to be untenable. The Labour Party is just tearing itself to pieces. And I'll tell you, I'll give you a prediction. This government will not see its full term. Mm. There will be a no confidence vote before very, very long, because everyone is just sick to death of all this. It's they get up in the morning and their policies are akin to the headlines of the newspapers.
Steve, thank you. It's incredible to think, was it 17 months ago, they came in with such a whopping majority, and here we are. And I think, at the very least, most people accept, if the local elections go so badly next year, as it is predicted, there will certainly be a challenge to Starmer. Sir Keir, as it is. Steve, thank you. More calls on that in a moment. Right, well, there's a world leader who's got some issues of his own, and let's go to another world leader on board Air Force One this weekend. President, I'm talking about a national broadcaster.
We'll sue them for anywhere between $1 billion and $5 billion, probably sometime next week.
So you're ready to take...
Well, I think I have to do it. I mean, they've even admitted that they cheated.
Would it be beyond the wit of man to develop a soundproofed area on board a jet? I know they're noisy. I've done interviews on board jets. I did Boris once. Would it be that hard just to put the prince... It almost sounds as though he's got his head in a tumble dryer. So, we now know the BBC is telling President Trump's lawyers it will fight his lawsuit, which, as you heard the president say, there could be in its billions. Let's turn to Ian Bloom, media law consultant. I'm sure you, Ian, like me, read the commentary over the weekend. Two things strike me. Tell me if I'm wrong, it wasn't actually transmitted in the United States of America. B, he went on to win. How crucial are some of those points? Ian, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. They're both important points. As you say, the jurisdictional issue, can he actually sue in the state or in Florida, his home state, is a vital first step in establishing whether this case can continue. If it does, the next question is what damage has he suffered? He never saw it. He may never have seen it. He may never see it. And yet, this is perhaps an opportunistic strike to exploit a serious editorial mistake by the BBC. But then, as you say, he won the election a week or so later. What possible financial damage has he suffered? $1 billion, $5 billion, these are fanciful figures. What the BBC really should be thinking about is getting a class... experienced investigative journalist who knows how to take down politicians, get him appointed, or her, but him probably, get him appointed to the Florida bar and let him loose. And I don't think you're doing much in 2027 when this case is likely to come up, are you, Nick?
I think that is way beyond my pay grade. Why is he... the simple answer to this question, Ian, is ask him. But why do you suppose he's doing this?
Because he... senses an opportunity to damage what he would regard as a hostile media organization, a really important one, whatever you think about the BBC, worldwide reputation and reach, and it hasn't been his best friend, he would think. And just as he's cowed the major American networks, ABC, CBS and so on, by effectively lawfare, exploiting a mistake they've made and extracting millions of dollars from them, the opportunity has arisen to do the same to the BBC, to put them in their place. And it may be as simple as that.
As we're talking about each other's careers, lastly, I know you've acted for and against some of the biggest media organisations in this country. Were your consultation requested for this one, what would your line of attack be with the BBC to support the BBC's case, Ian?
To defend it.
Yeah.
They cannot to give in to this. And it, although I've heard politicians say the BBC shouldn't be paying license payers money to settle this, who else's money is going to be paid if they settle for a modest sum or if they lose a big case? It either is the insurers or the BBC itself. That's the reality of litigation. They can't ignore a judgment if it fights in a year or 2 years' time and goes against them. But so they have to defend this because they have good grounds for defending it.
Ian Bloom, media law consultant, thanks for your input this morning. 7:28, Nigel in Temple Fortune. Let's come back to what we're hearing from the Home Secretary, and we'll hear a lot about today as she outlines the policies. What hope does she have, do you think? Good morning.
Good morning. May I make a quick comment, Nick, about the BBC very quickly before I give you my points on immigration?
Yeah, go ahead, of course.
Your esteemed caller or guest just now said it was a mistake. Was it a mistake to deliberately cut, splice and edit a speech and put them together? I don't think it was a mistake.
No, fair point. Yeah, it was a deliberate mistake. It was a mistake to broadcast it after a deliberate misedit. That's how I think we can both get
exactly.
out of that one. Yeah.
Going on to Shemima McMoon, I think that Keir Starmer is a ringmaster who can't control his own circus. And I think quite clearly, whatever the Labour do or Tories have tried to do, they're not interested in stopping illegal immigration. There's only one way to stop it. It's very simple. Stop the benefits being given out. So in other words, if someone comes to this country illegally and they are going to be given nothing, why would they come here?
But isn't that going to be part of what we're going to hear as well? Remember, you're going to have to wait, you know, 20 years instead of, I think it's 4 or 5 years. But it is the whole toughening up process, isn't it? Not, is that all we're hearing, Nigel?
No, you just cut it off completely. Stop it immediately. Then that way, why would you come here? If you can't get anything when you come here, my wife has to deal with some of these people. You know, they get given three...
Sorry, I don't know what your wife... Just give us a clue as to what she does.
Yeah, my wife works in a senior role within social care.
I see.
Okay, and she has to deal with people who are moved around. And different things, and awful thing with children. But the point is this: if people are put up in hotels, given 3 meals a day, given a mobile phone, given some spending money, you cut that off completely. Why would you come here,
Nigel? Best wishes to your wife. Thank you. Let's see what you're saying. Let's see what you're saying on social media. Alan, a politician working for Britain, finally. Well done, Mahmood. Just a shame the rest of her party don't have the same backbone. Meanwhile, Michael says, as you've just referenced it, perhaps she's in the wrong party. She should be with Reform UK if she believes in all of this. We'll come back to that conversation. Plus, do you remember the story of Jim, the vet, the Afghan veteran, the story from last week?
Op Fortitude has been under the LBC spotlight for a week. And finally, something good to report. I'm LBC's Andy Ballantyne with the latest.
It is 7:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Let's get the news headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Human rights laws are to be changed as part of a major overhaul of the asylum system due to be announced later. Refugee status will become temporary and the wait for permanent settlement will be quadrupled to 20 years. Donald Trump is now urging Republicans to vote and release files in the Jeffrey Epstein case in a major reversal of his stance. The president's come under pressure from within his own party to publish all unclassified documents. And a couple arrested after criticising their daughter's primary school in a WhatsApp group say Hertfordshire police had paid them £20,000 in damages. Rosalind Levine and Maxie Allen say they were held on suspicion of harassment in January. LBC weather, dry and chilly for most today, some light rain for northern Scotland, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
Just like when you amplify your advertising with radio. 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
The £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, 4 McNuggets and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right. £5. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11 a.m. Not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants subject to availability.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doom scrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, she's got a plan, but is it going to work? We'll come to that. It's a moral mission for Shabana Mahmood. We'll take your views on that. Into the world of business, 7:33, Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. And let's talk about what's running on City AM online, which is Treasuries and the Farming Report. Now, what might be lurking down there? Trouble down at the farm. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. That's right. Picking up from stories out over the weekend, and credit to the Sunday Times for unearthing this. The government commissioned a review some time ago into the profitability of British farming. It was all in reaction to the reaction to the inheritance tax changes, which, of course, saw farmers and tractors protesting throughout Whitehall for weeks and weeks. The imposition of inheritance tax and further business taxes on the family farm. A very contentious issue. The former Environment Secretary, Steve Reid, commissioned Baroness Batters, Minette Batters, former head of the NFU, to conduct a review into the sector. Now, he said, whilst he was still in that job, that he wanted it published ahead of the budget so that it could feed into the budget. Now, his successor, Emma Reynolds, has conceded that that's just not going to happen. And there are all sorts of murmurings and mutterings that actually the last thing the Treasury wants is for this unhelpful series of observations and ideas about the farming sector to take some space in the front pages in the run-up to the budget which we know is deeply contentious in its own right.
Yep.
So there is frustration among the farming community, certainly, who had been hoping that there would be a little bit of sunlight on some of these concerns and issues in the run-up to the budget, now not expected, only told now that it will be seen before Christmas.
Right, on to another area, the media. What's happening with the Telegraph Group?
Well, you know, I would say that people who read and enjoy the Telegraph could be forgiven for not understanding the kind of labyrinthine challenges and situations behind its ownership status. But the fact of the matter is, Telegraph journalists actually have been exceptionally on point in reporting on this situation themselves. So Telegraph readers might actually be among the best informed in the country on this issue. The drama all started when Lloyds Bank repossessed the Telegraph, basically, from the Barclay family in 2023 over some complicated debt arrangements. And there has been efforts to try to find a buyer ever since then. Now, the first effort was blocked because it had too much Middle East money in it, and a consortium came back with a lower stake of Middle East money. Redbird was the group that then came forward as a bit of a conglomerate to take ownership of the Telegraph. Hugely contentious for many different reasons, all sorts of reasons. The Redbird entities' links to China and all sorts of questions. The Telegraph led the charge against the potential new ownership, really. And that group pulled out at the end of last week. It was a £500 million bid for the news organisation, and they've said, actually, we just don't want it anymore. I think they've read the room. They've read the editorials as well at the Telegraph. So what happens now? Well, the consensus seems to be that the government needs to basically orchestrate an auction for this prize media asset. And indeed, in an editorial in the Telegraph, they've got some pretty clear ideas as to how that should happen and how the price point should be set and how potential bidders should be pre-vetted to ensure that everybody is, you know, a sensible and viable bidder. But it is still, as it stands, there will be some sighs of relief in the Telegraph newsroom that they're not going to fall under this contentious ownership structure. But it remains the case that they are now without an owner, and that makes it difficult to plan and to plan a path through what is, I take it from me, an ever-changing media landscape.
The nation's rail service and Formula One seem unlikely bedfellows. So why are they in the same headline, Christian?
I think you're right. They certainly sit at opposite ends of many spectrum, don't they? Great Western Railway, which is the one I travel on quite often, back down to my native Cornwall, has teamed up with a company that it is more used to providing reliable Wi-Fi connections and data connectivity to Formula One cars. And it's going to help some Great Western trains, this is sort of an experimental move, to build a new system that relies on satellite technology as well as trackside infrastructure to seriously boost the state of Wi-Fi connections on trains. Now, I don't think any people in this country will think that Wi-Fi on trains is one of the great points of British prowess at the moment. The UK ranks 16th out of 18 across European and Asian countries for Wi-Fi speed on trains. It's about 1 megabit per second, if that means much to you, but that does compare to Sweden's 64 megabits per second. So Swedish trains, you can sit there and stream Netflix, and on British trains, you sort of struggle to download an email. But it might be that on Great Western Railway, at least, they're going to try and do something about that.
And finally, why are the weight loss jabs not the job for some tailors?
Thank you. Well, there are about 1.5 million people in this country taking a form of one of these weight loss jabs, and we do hear now more and more about how it's changing certain industries, including restaurant industries, by the way. People just saying, I'll just have a starter, thank you very much. That changes the economics of hospitality. But we also see this morning a nice report out from some Savile Row tailors who say that actually they've got a significant number of customers, particularly gentlemen, particularly in their 50s, coming in and saying, I need all of my suits recut. And we're not just talking about an inch here and an inch there. Sean Dixon, who's a co-founder of Richard James Tailors, says that we're talking about some really substantial overhauls and specific tailoring. So I suppose that it could be a knock-on effect, a bit of a positive one there, if people are deciding that they still want to keep their fitted suits, they just don't fit anymore. They're going back to have them all not just taken in, I would possibly imagine, but remade.
Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM. We'll talk around the same time tomorrow, 7:39. We're talking about this, well, pretty much actually, which seems to be the main talk in Westminster at the moment, Shabana Mahmood's ambitions and plans to try and reform the biggest reform in generations. We're going to be speaking with one of her colleagues a little later in the hour. Let's get your voices on the radio. That's what we're about in the morning. Seamus in Wellington, thank you for hanging on the line. What chance or what chances do you give this? Good morning.
Morning to you, Mick. If I make a couple of points, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Firstly, can I remind everyone listening that this is a government responsible for one in, one out, which is about 100-ish or so out, mm-hmm. 38,000 in, just to put that in context.
Yep.
If I could also say that you're looking at a party that's got a prime minister as an ambulance-chasing human rights lawyer. That's where he made his career.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also like to mention to people that yesterday on Ali Mirage's show, we had a human rights lawyer phone in and say that no matter what is put in place, there is no chance of any change at all unless we opt out of the ECHR. Even if we look at modifying the ECHR, unless we opt out, this is not going to happen. And this is a guy that's actively litigating to bring people in and keep them in. So
you've forgotten one other person, my friend, the Attorney General, Lord Hermer, who is also a fully signed-up fan of the human rights legislation as well in the ECHR. And he's effectively the government's number one legal brief, as it were. So let's put him into the mix as well, Seamus.
I stand corrected, Nick. Can I also say that this is obfuscation
mm-hmm.
because of what's going to be happening to us all in the next couple of weeks, where we are going to be battered financially by this incompetent, bankrupt government, and we'll be paying the price, and our children will be paying the price, and then we all go on into crisis after crisis after crisis. We need this lot out, and we need some form of common sense and decency and putting British people first.
Seamus, thank you. 16 months, is it? July, August, September, October, November. 16 and a bit months. Now, and I've been around a few years in this job, it took a few years before people turned on the Conservatives to this level. I'm not saying towards the end, by the way, that they went all the 14 years, they didn't. You were probably correct. But it took a good couple of years, if not perhaps the first Parliament, for you to be disenchanted to this level. It is extraordinary. More on that in a moment. Now, if you were listening last week, you'll know that we picked up on this idea. We heard from a government minister who talked about Operation Fortitude. This is the idea that if you are a veteran and you're homeless, you simply dial a telephone number, or if someone you know or love is homeless, you dial the telephone number, and accommodation is found immediately. Well, we decided to put that to the test, and it did not go well when we focused on the particular case of Jim, who lives effectively homeless in Wales and had served in Afghanistan, so he was a military veteran. We championed his case. Unfortunately, he got nowhere. With one telephone call, he was told that we'd find accommodation for him and his dog, but not his partner. LBC got involved a little bit more through my colleague Andy Ballantyne, and he files the latest report. Andy, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. After 5 years on the road, 3 years living in horse boxes or caravans, 37-year-old veteran Jim, his partner and dog were desperate for an address to call home. 7 days ago, this was Minister for Veterans and People, Louise Sander-Jones, talking to you on LBC.
This is something I really want to get across, Nick, and I wonder if you could help me with this. It's not Fortitude. which is our helpline for any veteran that is facing sleeping on the streets tonight, or if you know a veteran that's sleeping on the streets tonight, call this number and the government will make sure that we find accommodation for them. And the number is, Nick, and this is a challenge for everybody to remember, this number, 0800 952 0774. If you're a veteran facing sleeping on the streets tonight, call that number and we will find accommodation for you.
LBC followed the ex-Royal Engineer who served between 2009 and 2015, including a tour of Afghanistan, as he called that number. Excuses and blockages. This is just some of Jim's frustrating journey.
The Operation Fortitude team are currently on another call and will be with you as soon as they can.
What you've just described, Nick, is completely unacceptable.
And I appreciate you have no knowledge, so I'm grateful for your comment.
Please leave your name and contact number, and we will call you back as soon as we can.
So there's no point in filling the form, then?
Well, no, not if it's for you and your partner, no.
Right.
When we played on air the person hanging up the phone, suddenly there was a complete change in attitude. Within 90 minutes, they'd rung Jim back. A caseworker was assigned. And then the best news possible.
We've had a few conversations since then. Very clear that it should help me, my partner and my dog. It looks quite a nice place. It seems like it's a set of farms. I think it's a trust. It's a temporary place and they offer you some work within various farms that they're on.
Overnight, Jim, a changed person, smiling, now full of hope and positivity, and above all, finally, a place to call home. He hopes to move in as soon as possible and start hunting for a job. And Nick, Jim had this message for you.
Thank you to Nick Ferrari and all the team for all the work. Thank you very much for your help. It's good to see journalism on the right side of things. Hopefully I've got a more hopeful future.
Finally, Nick, the Ministry of Defence told LBC, we are resolving the issues raised by LBC as a matter of urgency. Every veteran deserves appropriate support and we take any concerns very seriously and always look to improve the service.
LBC's Andy Ballantyne reporting. The thanks are purely one way. We thank Jim for his service. Remember, he served in Afghanistan. 7.45, you're going to hear from a government minister more about this supposed biggest and most sweeping reforms in a generation after this. 7.45, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Home Secretary will announce plans later to change human rights laws to make it easier to deport failed asylum seekers. LBC understands the government's planning to roll out a new marketing campaign in foreign countries to discourage people from illegally moving to the UK. And President Trump has urged Republicans in Congress to vote and release all the files relating to Jeffrey Epstein. LBC weather dry and chilly for most. Some light rain for the north of Scotland. A high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. On the M25, anti-clockwise, the right-hand up for tunnel is closed for emergency repairs, so it's down to two lanes, and there are severe delays from Junction 3 for the M20. There are also queues on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 26 for Waltham Abbey to 25 for Enfield after a van broke down earlier. There are long delays on the M25 clockwise. One lane is closed after Junction 9 for Leatherhead because of an accident. It is slowing Greenwich. Pear Tree Way is blocked in both directions between Bugsby's Way and the Woolwich Road flyover. That's because of an accident. There's only one Woolwich ferry running. On the Tube, on the Northern Line, Angel Station is exit only. That's because of problems with the escalators. And some bus routes in West, North West and South West London are disrupted today because of a strike.
This is LBC.
At Morrison's, we're making a big deal out of our big deals this Black Friday. From electronics to toys to kitchen appliances and beauty products, you can save on big brands like KitchenAid, Lego, Bosch, Bayliss and Harding and Toshiba. All with your more card. Hurry, when it's gone, it's gone.
Morrison's, the shop at Morrison's.
Majority of stores online varies, excludes Morrison's Daily More Colour at required 18 plus.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
When you're smiling.
Don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on
prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
7:49. Well, the biggest conversation in town is about these sweeping reforms to the migration policy. We heard a lot from the Home Secretary. Let's speak with one of her senior colleagues now for a bit more detail. Alex Norris is a Labour MP and Minister for Border Security and Asylum and joins me now. Just won't run, my listeners, if you would please, through the main details, the main headlines of this proposed policy. Good morning to you.
Morning, Nick. Thanks for having me. Well, as you say, the Home Secretary this afternoon will announce the biggest changes to our asylum system in modern times. We are in this situation where asylum claims are falling across Europe, but in the UK are up considerably. There is something different going on that we have to address. So our policy will have three aspects to it. Firstly, to reduce the reasons and the ability for people to come to this country illegally. Secondly, that when people, you know, are assessed to not have a legitimate reason to be in this country or commit crimes, to make sure they can be removed more easily. And then finally, to establish safe and legal routes so that people aren't coming across the continent, aren't coming across the channel in those dangerous ways. So put together an incredibly significant package aimed at making sure we restore order and control our borders and build public confidence.
So if we go through those, Minister, reduce the reasons is number one. What does that look like in practical terms?
Well, in practical terms, that means that that core package of protection that an individual gets will be reduced to 2.5 years, that will be reviewable. It means that if they've come to this country illegally, then their route to settlement will be 20 years rather than 5 years. You know, a real deterrent. At the moment, people believe that, you know, Britain's seen as the golden ticket, that if you come to Britain, you know, you'll be put up in a hotel, you'll be able to work illegally, and then you'll be allowed to stay and after 5 years access the NHS, access social housing, and we're changing that.
And removal. Let's talk a little bit about that, the second of your three key points.
Well, it's really important that if people have had their claim assessed, they've had an appeal rejected, then of course they should leave. You know, we're an open, generous and tolerant country, but you have to have rules, and if people fail in their asylum application or if they commit crimes, then they need to be removed from the country. We've removed 50,000 since we came to office, which is a 10-year high, but we need to do much more. So we're going to reform the appeals system so it's much more streamlined, a one-stop decision. We're going to say to those, we are saying to those countries that we have agreements with that aren't living up to them, that we will put visa sanctions in place if they do not take their citizens back who have no right to be in this country. And we're going to be revising our domestic interpretation of Article 8 of the European Convention so that it is one that is fit for purpose. So significant changes, Nick.
So just to clarify, if it's me, I'm allowed one appeal and solely one. So I'm told you can't stay here. I'm allowed one appeal and then I'm out. Just to clarify. Is that right, Minister?
That absolutely. Now, that's not to say that you know, that there wouldn't be, in very exceptional cases, say that the, you know, between the point at which you had your appeal rejected and your deportation flight, that if the regime in the country you came from fell over, that, you know, you wouldn't have that new information assessed. But what we won't have is people saying at different stages, oh, I said I was 32, now I say I'm 16. Oh, I now, having had 15 opportunities to say this, I'm now saying I'm a victim of slavery. You know, we've got to stop these ways in which people game it. Let's get their their strongest version of their case all in one place at the beginning. Let's make a genuine assessment of that on its merits, and if they fail, then I'm afraid they must leave.
Your last point was these safer routes. A lot of commentators would say, and I think possibly you'd allow this to a degree, we've struggled enough as it is without those safe routes. Wouldn't the pressure, if we had those routes actually in place, wouldn't that become potentially even more intolerable, Minister?
No, I don't think so at all, because actually, you know, I know both for Nottingham and for the UK, when there have been safe routes, such as the Syrian scheme, the Afghan resettlement scheme, Homes for Ukraine, the Hong Kong BNO scheme, you know, things that have been orderly, been managed, actually communities across the country have really stepped up to get involved, civil society, faith groups, local authorities, but they can't do that at the moment because of the loss of control and the unfairness in the system. I know the British people. I know how generous, how tolerant they are. So, you know, I think actually people will lean into that, but they won't do that until and unless we have that control at our borders. And that's what this package is designed to tackle.
Now, a lot of people are saying that, ambitious as this undoubtedly is, and to many of my listeners, it's probably music to their ears, but it is unattainable all the time. The United Kingdom is still in the ECHR, European Convention on Human Rights. Do you share that view, Minister? And if not, why not?
No, I think that's rubbish, Nick. The reality is everything that the Home Secretary announces today, which will be a very significant package that I think your listeners will really think is a good one, all of that can be done within our domestic law or our domestic application of those international treaties. Were we to just try and do those route one solutions, tear up agreements with no real idea of why, what they would do actually is remove the basis that much of our return agreements are on, so we're ripping those up and starting again. Obviously, other very important things to our security in this country are based on them, and we'd be renegotiating them just to get back to where we are today. So I'm saying let's not go into that phony, you know, kind of line of inquiry, but instead saying let's make the changes that are well within our gift, which are the changes we're announcing today, and that's how we can restore order and control.
How confident are you that the Attorney General, Lord Hermer, will fully support your plans? He has been known to perhaps take a rather different view to this in certain cases in the past, Minister.
I'm totally confident. You know, this is a there is collective agreement across the entire government. You know, we recognise the challenge. We recognise what we need to deliver for the British people on this. You know, everyone is totally committed to the package that we're announcing today.
You say everyone is committed, I'm sure, in your teams, but you can't even say that of your own party. You'll be aware of your colleague Tony Vaughan, who is also a King's Counsel, who's already posted the government needs to, and I quote, think again. How big is the potential revolt within your own ranks, do you imagine, Minister?
Well, I've had a chance to talk to Tony late last week. I know he's got, you know, a lot of experience, a lot of thoughtful contributions. I would gently say he hasn't seen the package yet, and colleagues haven't seen the package yet. I think that my colleagues want the same as I want, that they want a system that doesn't fuel organised crime, that people don't make dangerous journeys, that people don't jump the queue ahead of people who genuinely need refuge. I know they see the Britain I do that is a generous, open and tolerant one. I say to them that if we're going to maintain the public's confidence in having that sort of asylum system, we cannot have 30,000 people in hotels, 40,000 people crossing by dangerous boat journeys. That's why we're doing this package. And in doing so, we can open safe and legal routes and have, you know, the system we want. So I think we're in service of the same goal. I accept that we're going to have to engage with Parliament. You know, that's a really important part of the process to convince them that the government's plans are right. And, you know, we're well up for that.
Well, if you get this through, and I can hear the determination in your voice, and I saw, obviously, the Home Secretary on the TV, I heard her on the radio, when would it be in place?
Well, the reality is across the package, there's a mixture there, because there are some things that can be done today and immediately. What I'm talking about with visa sanctions, you know, these are things that we're measuring in days rather than weeks. There are other things that will take, you know, longer running. For example, the appeals system that I talk about, that requires primary legislation. So, you know, but the best time to start that is today. We are, of course, already, you know, we've really increased the work we've done on raids, as I've talked about on the show before. You know, we've increased our assessment of claims to get people through the system more quickly. We're removing more people than have been removed in a decade. So it's a real mixture of the very immediate and then those slightly longer term things too. But we have to do all of them in order to have the system we need.
Final question, the one in, one out deal, which was launched, I think, 3 or 4 months ago. Where are the numbers on that? How are we succeeding or otherwise with that, Minister?
So 113 people have been removed to France under that scheme. 84 have come back to the UK in return. You know, that is part of of that 50,000 removal figure that is about, you know, creating that deterrent to people and being very clear.
Pretty slim pickings, isn't it, Minister? Well, seeing it's been operated, what, 3 months now? Yeah, 3 months.
But Nick, you know, because we've had this conversation, I think, as recently as the week before last. Yes. It's a pilot scheme that we want to increase. However, I say to you, it's grounded in a much bigger, area of work. 50,000 people, the highest in 10 years. Our reforms today will make it easier because there are people that have no right to be here that can't be removed. By changing that, we will increase the numbers that I know you want to see and I want to see as well.
And more importantly, so do our listeners and so do your voters. Grateful for your time. Thank you, Minister for Border Security and Asylum, Alex Norris, appearing here on LBC 2 minutes before 8. Let's get one reaction into what you've heard and, of course, the story more generally. Steve in Brighton, how much confidence do you have on this particular plan coming to fruition? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. None. Before they come, pass this message to Calais. For illegals, if you come here, nothing. Mm. Nothing at all. Not ever. No housing, hotel, trainers, money, phone, job, benefits, passport, NI number, status, lease, remain, family. Just don't bother coming. And I've got a clue for you. I love Scotland, but there's a place in Scotland so grim you can't land on it called the Shantiles. Right. There's nothing there except a penguin and a puffin. Let them live there.
Lastly, what if their claim is successful, though? If they have genuine right to live
in the Shant Islands will...
No, but then they'll get their NI, their national insurance numbers, will they? If they're successful then, right? No?
No, but if you tell them in advance, nothing, no, they won't come. Kill the draw factor.
Which is very much what they did in Australia, and they put them on, I think it's called Nauru, or Nauru, how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
And you see the Shant... Sorry, go on.
The Shant Islands are... I've been there. Grim, cold and wet.
All right. Well, certainly that wouldn't. I don't think people would be wanted across the channel for that. Grateful. Thank you for hanging on the line. The music means we must continue. And while we may well return to the story, coming up in the next hour, how climate change anxiety could fuel drug use. Psychotherapist Caroline Hickman is with the Climate and Psychology Alliance, explaining why people are feeling anxious about climate change.
People have got much more strong anxiety where there is this breakdown of trust. And they are not reassured because they're not seeing action.
Plus, cop that. Are you one of the nearly 500,000 drivers who've been caught with speeding tickets in those new 20-mile-an-hour zones? And Ricky Gervais, it would seem, in a battle with London Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan over the level of crime in this city. I'll give you more details later in there. News is next on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, the government will set out full details later of its major overhaul of the asylum system. It includes changes to human rights laws to deport illegal migrants. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, says it's a moral mission to tackle the issue. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark has more details.
Asylum seekers will have to wait 20 years before they can stay permanently. That's quadrupled from now. Refugee status is only going to be temporary and will be revoked. There will be Danish-style family restrictions on reunions. Weekly allowances will be revoked for those who can work and don't. And countries which don't take back foreign criminals will have their visa allocations restricted in a Donald Trump-style move.
The plans are understood to be causing concern among some Labour backbenchers, with some also threatening to block them. But speaking to Nick, the Border Security Minister, Alex Norris, has said that he wants colleagues to work with the government.
I think that my colleagues want the same as I want, that they want a system that doesn't fuel organised crime, that people don't make dangerous journeys, that people don't jump the queue ahead of people who genuinely need refuge. I know they see the Britain I do that is a generous, open and tolerant one. I say to them that if we're going to maintain the public's confidence in having that sort of asylum system, we cannot have 30,000 people in hotels, 40,000 people crossing by dangerous boat journeys.
Separately, the government is planning a major campaign in foreign countries to discourage people from illegally moving to the UK. LBC understands that TV and radio adverts are to be rolled out in Middle Eastern and North African countries. You can read more on this story at lbc.co.uk. In other news this morning, Donald Trump is now urging Republicans to vote and release files in the Jeffrey Epstein case. In a major reversal of his stance, the president says we have nothing to hide. A vote will be held later this week, which could see the publication of more documents related to the late sex offender.
A couple arrested after criticising their daughter's primary school in a WhatsApp group says police have paid them £20,000 in damages. Hertfordshire police previously said that the arrests were necessary to investigate claims of harassment and malicious communications. Rosalind Levine and Maxie Allen now say the police have admitted liability for wrongful arrest. The force is yet to comment. And a cold weather health warning comes into force this morning for much of the northern half of England. Snow and ice are possible for some this week. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 96.98. It closed down 109 on Friday. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather dry and chilly for most today. Some light rain for northern Scotland with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees. Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after 8, Monday, November the 17th. Combating climate change or climate change anxiety, which could fuel drug use. We're going to give you the latest on that report. And ask particularly for your children, or in some instances your grandchildren, how do you combat the extraordinary levels of gloominess, of pessimism that abound by so many people in this area? In other news, well, he's never been afraid to cause offence.
If you do win tonight, remember that no one cares about that award as much as you do. It's a bit of metal that some nice old confused journalists wanted to give you in person so they could meet you and have a selfie with you.
That's Ricky Gervais hosting the Golden Globes a few years ago. Well, the latest target of Mr. Gervais's ire is the London Mayor, Sir Sadiq Khan. Mr. Gervais saying that there is rampant crime, such as phone theft in this city. The mayor saying, in fact, crime is under control. It doesn't feel like it to me, and I'll be asking you how you feel about crime in this city. Meanwhile, in other news, cop that!
A policy that will save people's lives. And if that means that people will have to drive a little more slowly and carefully, then I'm absolutely sure that this is the right thing to do.
Then, First Minister of Wales, Mark Drakeford, speaking back in 2023, bringing in a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit almost across all of Wales. Well, now, if you put it across the whole of the country, just under 500,000 speeding fines have been issued on those roads. I'm making the case that in some instances, by schools, old folks' homes, whatever, yes. In other instances, it is wrong, it is unnecessary, and it's merely a way of getting cash. Plus, opening up about the experience of having a prem or premature baby. Princess Beatrice was on the Born podcast.
My favourite thing about being a mum is the fact that it's like a secret, you know, it almost feels like a secret club of sharing stories. How can we make sure that great doctors have everything at their disposal so that no mum can feel alone?
Princess goes on to talk about that extraordinary experience of loneliness. And I didn't know, but today is World Prematurity or Prematurity Day today. If you've been a prem mum, you had a premature child, what are the additional challenges and hurdles you had to clear?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
How worried are you about climate change? Now, if you're my sort of age, you've had so many worries in the past. Year 2K, year 2000, the planes were going to drop out of the sky, your bank accounts are going to be wiped out, everything was going to go wrong, governments would fall. There have been so many scares that you become a little bit jaundiced. But that's the sheer product of having been on this earth a lot longer than some of the many other folk. Would I feel the same way if I was in my pre-teens or teens? Possibly not. Do I notice through family and friends that their children are far more concerned and at times quite gloomy about the future of the planet? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And yet, speaking my instance, my parents' generations, they had to rebuild the country after the Second World War. I remember as a school child going to places that were still effectively bomb sites and people just used to park on them. They were just great craters in the ground. Because, and you'd say, I don't know, I'd be about nine. Why is it so... Oh, well, this was the Germans bombed this a lot, so they just use it as a car park now. So that you didn't pay for a ticket, you just parked on a literally on a bomb site. And everyone dusted themselves, got themselves... Now, please don't think for a moment, I am not negating the impact of climate change for a moment. It is something... By the way, you know they're still meeting at COP in Brazil. How long does this go on? How much is it costing? More pertinently, what does it achieve? But put that to one side. We're having this conversation as the UK Health Security Agency says people are at risk of being gripped by eco-fear, eco-anger and eco-grief, and their mental well-being could be damaged. The agency is overseen by the Department of Health and Social Care. Also suggests emotional trouble linked to climate change can lead to drug abuse. Well, again, this speaks... I'm not a drug user, but this speaks to people younger than I, doesn't it? That they're going to think, this is awful, we're doomed. The whole, not just the country, the whole planet's doomed. We may as well try this drug, that drug, get drunk, do whatever. So how do you temper the need, undoubtedly the need, to address climate change and not to, as it were, frighten the children? Let's turn first to Dr. Marianne Trent, who's a clinical psychologist and hosts the Aspiring Psychologist podcast. Doctor, when you're dealing with a case of fear, whether it's fear of failure, fear of divorce, fear of sexual impotence, fear of climate change, how do you combat that fear? Good morning.
Hi, good to speak to you, Nick. So all of it really is linked to lack of control. So we're really trying to get an understanding of why that is particularly resonant for that person. And it's likely that this isn't the first episode where this has shown up. So really trying to get to know the person individually and get a sense of why this might have taken hold is the first step.
Doctor, how irresponsible or otherwise have some politicians, the media and some organisations been in this area, would you say?
I don't necessarily think it's about irresponsibility, but I think you made a really interesting point, you know, when you were doing the intro, saying about actually when you were growing up, it was all about the post-world, post-war era.
Yeah.
And of course, there is so much in the media at the moment about climate change. And if people are online a lot on socials, it is really common. And, you know, what we know is the algorithm which will show you more of what, you know, what you spent longer watching. And so it tries to serve you up what it thinks you're interested in to keep you on for longer. So if you've got a vulnerability to anxiety or to kind of OCD presentations, the algorithm is always almost going to work against you because it's going to keep serving you that stuff, which might keep you spiraling.
Now, I'm of an age where my children are having children, so I have no idea what there is being taught in schools. How confident are you that there is a decent education plan which shows the issues, which please don't think I am not dodging that, but also shows that my human race has an extraordinary capability of survival?
Yeah, but I do have younger children. I've got a child in year 8 and a child in year 5.
Okay.
And from what I understand, you know, they are teaching them
about... One in
about
big school and one in little school, as it were.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. They are teaching them, but, you know, it's ever-changing, isn't it? And I think it's often thinking about what you can do as an individual. Well, actually, you know, the politician's kind of job is to think about what we can do collectively. But all of these changing targets and then the missed targets, and I don't think that necessarily helps somebody to feel safer, because then they're thinking, well, maybe it is on me to make this shift. Maybe I need to be the difference that makes the difference.
Let's go lastly a little bit further up the age scale than your children. So just someone in their teens, mid-teens, and all their friends are saying we're doomed, the planet's finished, all these politicians are doing nothing, the earth is frying, whatever it might be, I'm really nervous. How does a parent reassure that teenager?
I think we have to be really careful that we get on board with the distress. So as a mother myself, we want our children to not be distressed, but we also don't want to give them false information. But sitting with them, alongside them in that distress and allowing them to show that actually is really important. We obviously don't want that to go on for days and weeks and months and years.
No.
But we don't want to invalidate people. And I guess that's my fear with this story even, is that we're saying, well, actually, this isn't the war. This isn't, but actually there's so much in the media and, you know, linked to lack of hope. You'll never be able to afford a mortgage. You'll never be able to do this. You'll never be able to do that. And so it again speaks to that lack of control, lack of being able to self-actualize. So sitting alongside people in their distress is really key, although I appreciate it's also challenging to do. And I think the story was linked to drug use and alcohol use and yes. stuff like that as well. And what we're looking at there is the window of tolerance. So when we're feeling really down in the dumps about something, slumped and dissociated, we might need to bump ourselves up. And if we're over distressed, kind of hyper aroused, the opposite, we'd need to kind of bring our agitation, bring our distress down. So I think that's probably where the substance stuff is coming in.
I will leave there, Doctor. Thank you, Marion Trent. You're a clinical psychologist. You host the Aspiring Psychologist podcast, 12 after 8. Listening, Fergal McEntee, who's an environmental campaigner and renewable energy professional. How should this important message be tailored for younger people? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, look, just to put things into context, it's a real fear. And you know, young people are very aware of actually what's going on in the climate and the planet. And as you said, you can go onto social media, but the, you know, we've just had the hottest bonfire night ever on record in the UK. You know, it's you know, people see this, they get anxious. There's a sense of like just being described there of like hopelessness.
Yes,
and
but we don't want that to lead particularly young people into potential drug use, do we?
No, 100% not. No. But like,
so how do we tailor the same question? How do we tailor that message then? So we make the children aware. Lord knows they must be aware, but we don't frighten them. We give them a sense of hope as well.
Yeah, I think it's a question of like, you know, I think the parents need to be educators. I think a lot of the times there's a bit of disconnect there where the parents still don't understand enough actually what's going on and what actions have been taken. Mm. So I think
and is that like the media's fault, the politician's fault, the campaigner's fault? Why is a clearer picture not being portrayed?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more the media and politicians can do, like to actually, like, first you have to address the problem and acknowledge that it's real, but also then we have to look at the solutions. And you know, if, like, in my field, like I've actually suffered from like anxiety quite a lot. It was actually back in probably 2006, 2007, I started reading these reports, and it's actually what got me to change my job from, I used to be a surveyor and I changed into renewables, and it actually helped me to deal with my anxiety. So
have you had treatment for your anxiety, Mr. McEntee?
No, it was. I had a lot of problems of like not being able to sleep at night, feeling hopelessness, and feeling these very things that actually the report talking about. And so what I found is like I became a like an environmental campaigner. Okay. So actually actively.
Do you mind my asking whether you have children? Or?
No, I don't. I don't have children, but I've got like 10 nieces and nephews, young.
And how? What do you pick up from them? That would be quite an age range then, Mr. McEntee. What do you pick up from them about their level of anxiety on this?
Yeah, I've got one niece, and she's actually very anxious about the planet. Nice. And I just explained to her like we go through changes. That acknowledging that it is a problem. I think sometimes parents can just try and like coat things down and say no, it's fine. But you can just go online and you can just read these like, you know, really scary reports of like, you know, where the world's going. You see wildfires and floods and everything. And, you know, so I think the first is to acknowledge it, but also to actually like take small actions. Like,
well, you've taken a massive action by changing your career, and good luck with what you do. Thanks for him. And good luck. Be well, both physically and emotionally, with the work that you're doing. All right, calls coming in on this. Also coming up after the news.
But you know that old thing, live fast, die young. Not my way. Live fast, sure, live too bloody fast sometimes. But die young, die old. That's the way. Not orthodox, you know. I don't live by the rules.
He doesn't live by the rules. Ricky Gervais there from The Office. And the rules means that some of the advertisements that he's put on the London Underground are taken down. They're effectively prohibited because of the message or the stance he takes against Sir Sadiq Khan and the London administration. I'll share more with you on that, as we're told that crime is down in London, but having had my car nicked not so long ago, it doesn't feel like it for me, and I'd never had a car stolen before. 8:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Home Secretary will announce plans later to change human rights laws to make it easier to deport failed asylum seekers. LBC understands the government's planning to roll out a new marketing campaign in foreign countries to discourage people from illegally moving to the UK. And President Trump has urged Republicans in Congress to vote and release all the files relating to Jeffrey Epstein. LBC weather, dry and chilly for most. Some light rain for the north of Scotland, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. On the M25, anti-clockwise, the right-hand Dartford Tunnel is closed for emergency repairs, so it's down to two lanes, and there are severe delays from Junction 3 for the M20. There are long delays on the M25 clockwise from Junction 7 for the M23, round to Junction 9 for Leatherhead after an accident earlier. In Islington, the queues on City Road westbound, it's down to one lane at Upper Street because roadworks are overrunning. It's slowing. Greenwich Pear Tree Way is blocked in both directions between Bugsby's Way and the Woolwich Road flyover because of an accident. There's only one Woolwich ferry running. On the Tube, there are severe delays on the entire Northern line. That's because a train has broken down. And some bus routes in West, Northwest and Southwest London are disrupted today. That's because of a strike.
LBC.
Agent parents, if your child experiences bedwetting, your mission, should you choose to accept it, is Operation Leak Free Night. Step 1, dress your little ninja in Pampers Ninjamas. Step 2, complete the evening activity chart. Toilet, PJs, lights out. Each task earns a Ninjama star. 3 stars, you've unlocked peak ninja powers, leak protection and unstoppable confidence. Mission accomplished at sunrise. Try Pampers Ninjamas now. Ninjamas.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
A lot of reaction coming in on the emails and the texts. Let's get to the calls first, though. 8:20 is the time, and it's Flo in Bristol. Flo, we're talking about a friend, is that right, who got concerned over this? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Good morning. First-time caller. Love the show.
Good to have you on. What are you going to tell me?
I was compelled because it's quite interesting, your previous guest talking about the loss of control. I've experienced that first-hand with a friend of mine. Right. He was a friend from uni. We were incredibly close. He was always a little bit alternative, very early adopter of electric cars and so on.
Oh, right.
When Extinction Rebellion came round, he joined that, got really into it. And oddly, it was a similar time when he unfortunately lost contact with his son and partner. So the loss of control element really resonates, I think, with what she was saying. And as he joined this group, he would sort of look at me and berate me a little bit for my lifestyle. And it would kind of get more intense and worse. And I tried to make a few changes. I'd listen to him and we debated a little bit. It's now got to the point where for 4 years we haven't spoken. And the last time we spoke, we had a long argument about it. And I was single at the time. I'm now very happily married. Sure. Thank you very much. But he said his sort of argument or parting shot, if you like, was why am I not thinking about the impact on the climate before I have a child? I was like, well, I'm not even there yet, mate.
But, wow.
You know, he was truly brainwashed by it. And sometimes I try and have a calm conversation. Say, okay, well, talk to me. Show me some stuff. Like, let me understand what it is, the information, the data that's making you feel so bad about it. Mm. And he would show me these Extinction Rebellion YouTube videos. And I'd watch it. And it was it offered nothing, Nick. But what it did do, I think, was really play on people's emotions. You know, there'd be a 15-minute break in the middle of the workshop of this video, 15-minute break for everyone to hug and cry about it. Like, wow, does that help?
What did you say to him? Did you try and get a degree of rationality into your mate?
Of course I did. I tried so many things, so many times, but he just wouldn't have it. He really wouldn't have it. You know, for example, I went on the most expensive, eco-friendly, gas and electricity provider in the UK, and still, it was never enough. I couldn't do enough. But there was never an answer for what should I be doing or what more I need to do. It was bizarre and absolutely gutting because, like I said, I lost a really dear friend and we haven't spoken in ages.
And when you say ages, just lastly, how long ago did you lose your mate?
It was about 4 years since we had that last argument, yeah.
And last, okay, how do you view climate change, before I let you go?
A healthy sceptic.
Thanks for your call. Look after yourself. I did mention lots coming in on social media. James says, you've had someone to explain climate change, but I don't think he did. It should be made clear to children we only emit 1% of the world's solution. I think you mean pollution. Politicians are rowing back for good reason. This time around, no media coverage of COP says it all. Well, James in Cardiff, you told me where. I do apologise, James. I can't believe COP is still going on. They've been banging on down there for God knows how many days. And did you see they cut down some of the rainforest to make a road so they could get to that part of Brazil? But doesn't that... And I'm sure there are... Please don't... I'm not dismissing everyone. There will be people down there who are doing it for all the right reasons. And they're desperate to try and bring about a solution. But really... Uris says, climate change scares me, but not because of CO2 emissions. The true problem is deforestation caused by overpopulation. I started a petition to COP30 participants. People are not interested. They're not, are they? All right, we'll come back to that conversation, but to other matters. And if you're in London, and I know that there's crime across the whole of the country, please don't think I'm ignoring the nationwide position, I should say. But it's because of a row going on between Ricky Gervais and the London Mayor, Sir Sadiq Khan. You may have seen this story in one of your newspapers, the Sunday Telegraph, yesterday, because Mr. Gervais has once again taunted the London Mayor, this time with a tube ad promoting his Dutch Barn vodka, which takes aim squarely at the rampant phone theft in London. And now he's the co-owner of the brand, and he's seen in the poster raising a glass with the tagline, "Welcome to London, hold on to your phone." Now, this isn't the billboard is at Bank Station, and Mr. Gervais has urged his followers to snap and share it, because it costs a lot of money and it's going to be pulled down. He's pretty certain it will, because his previous, what's called shock marketing, has. In the past, his messages have been, "Welcome to London, don't forget your stab vest. One day you'll be underground for good." And this one, with his vodka, Dutch Barn vodka, with the tagline, "Your tube driver's favourite drink in the morning." Now, that wasn't allowed to be up for very long either. They all had to come down. TfL and Sir Sadiq Khan's team point to the fact that crime is at a low in London and that there are well-funded initiatives, particularly targeting phone theft. But it just doesn't feel like it for me. So on the subject of phone... And by the way, when you use your phone, please, I know everyone does it, when you come out of a tube station, it is automatic to look at your phone to see if you missed any messages, possibly to use maps as well, to get to where you want to go. Don't do it. You are such a victim if you do it. Do what I do, which is just go into a shop doorway, because then at least you've got your back and they're not going to be... Well, it's going to be a bit of a fight if they want to get to you then. And also put your earbuds in. You then don't know what's going on. Anyway, let's talk to someone. What is the reality? Emma Hall, what happened to you? Was it last year and where in London was it? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yep, so it was April 2024.
Yep.
I had left the flat literally to probably only walk 250 yards over the road to go to the pub and to meet friends. Three lads circled around me on their bikes.
Oh, gosh, I've seen video of this sort of thing.
Out of my hand. What they say that there would have been a spotter ahead that would have seen me take my phone out.
Right.
And they're on the phone to each other and they call back to give a description of who's got hold of a phone.
Right.
And they know who to come and grab it from.
How long had you left your apartment? How long had you been out on the streets?
I left the flat. I'd probably been out 30 seconds.
And they come up and what happens? The lad just grabs it out of your hand and cycles off with it.
I had it quite close to my body. Mm-hmm. And he just, you could feel him brush past and he just grabbed it And as he rode off, he waved it in the air at me as if it was a trophy.
What happened next? Did you try and track it?
Yes, I did try and track it. So I went straight back to my iPad so I could track the phone.
Yeah.
And more importantly, erase the content because my phone was open when he took it.
Right.
I traced it to two addresses in North London that evening.
Right.
And then it was switched off the following morning. And 3 weeks later, it popped up in China.
It's not the first time I've heard of this. Yeah. You contacted the police?
I contacted the police, and they actually came to my apartment to interview me, which I was quite surprised at, because I've had a phone pickpocketed on Oxford Street before now.
Have you? Right.
And you just get your reference number and that's it.
Yeah.
But they did come to interview to find out more, which did surprise me.
Can you give my listeners, Emma, a level of the interruption to your life, and disruption is a better word, the disruption to your life this caused?
I think it was the shock to begin with, how quick it happens. And if I'd have had the phone, say, attached on one of those wrist attachments, they probably would have taken me with them. And that has happened to a friend. He actually tried to keep hold of his phone and they broke his wrist and
good grief.
Took the phone.
Was that in London as well?
That was in London as well.
See, here's what I don't get. Mr. Gervais is putting these posters up. Welcome to London, hold on to your phone. The response from TfL and City Hall is that crime is an all-down low. It just doesn't feel... Well, how does it feel for you? You're out in the streets of London like I am.
I certainly don't. I mean, I'm in Facebook groups in East London, and it's often a daily occurrence, and people will put out warnings. We've just seen the people on the bikes taking the phones, watch out in this area. It doesn't feel like there's much change in it. I don't carry my phone out my pocket anymore.
No.
I have it attached.
I was going to ask you've attached it to what, to a cable?
So, yeah, I've got one of those cables.
Okay, you're showing me. That so must be for your neck. Is that your neck? That's not around your wrist.
It goes across your body.
Oh.
And then I can wear it under my jacket or over, put it in my pocket.
Okay.
Now, I do exactly what you've just said, go into a doorway.
Yeah.
I've got to take my phone out.
Yeah. Yeah.
The tip is you stand with your back to the street.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you look a little bit weird.
Yeah. I don't think you do. You see, in central, I know Stratford, I don't use it, but in central London, I am not the only person using the doorway when you want to see, when you need to access the maps as to where the hell you're trying to get to.
Yeah.
I am not on my own by any stretch.
I've started to use my Apple Watch, so I will actually program the route.
Right.
And then set it before I get off the tube.
Okay.
And then just leave it in my pocket.
Lastly, and this is neither Sir Sadiq's fault or TfL's fault, but when these people are caught, it does appear they get astonishingly light sentences. And I would have thought, if you've got a couple of high-profile ones, and you actually put them behind bars for 10 years, I don't know, it might... it'll never deter all crime. Your view on that, Emma?
I think they need to start profiling proper punishment for people that are doing this. Mm. Otherwise, it's... The more that they don't do anything, you'll just keep having the crime happen and you'll just keep getting away with it because there's no comeback.
You look after yourself out there. Thanks so much for sharing your story. I'm so sorry on your behalf. Emma Hall, someone who had her phone taken last year, and yet we're told we've never had it. I don't know. We'll take a lot of calls coming in on that. We will. Tony, come back to you and climate change. And also coming up after the news, well, remember they they really rolled this out across most of Wales. The then First Minister, Mark Drakeford, talking about the 21-hour speed limit.
A policy that will save people's lives. And if that means that people will have to drive a little more slowly and carefully, then I'm absolutely sure that this is the right thing to do.
488,599 tickets for going over 20 miles an hour have been issued. Nearly 500,000. In some instances on roads where it's perfectly safe to go 30, I would argue. We'll take your views, more importantly. Just on 8:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Newstime, Dominic Ellis.
Human rights laws are to be changed as part of a major overhaul of the asylum system due to be announced later. Refugee status will become temporary and the wait for permanent settlement will be quadrupled to 20 years. Separately, the government is planning a major campaign in foreign countries to discourage people from illegally moving to the UK. LBC understands TV and radio adverts are to be rolled out in Middle Eastern and North African countries. And President Trump has changed his mind and backed calls to release government documents about the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. He'd previously blocked their publication, but in a surprise U-turn overnight, Mr. Trump says his party has nothing to hide. LBC weather, dry and chilly for most, some light rain for the north of Scotland, a high today of 9 degrees.
LBC. Waitrose presents...
And the main event.
One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Enough for me.
Sometimes it whispers.
I saved you best bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble wrapped in dry-cured beechwood smoked bacon with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today, and hang on, is that a Scrabble tournament in coach here? Yes, G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour, same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll. The cafe bar's in Coach G if you fancy a brew. Or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
8:33, Tony and Chertsey, you've been hanging on the line. Let's get straight to you. There is now such concern, particularly among young people, that it's feared it could fuel drug use over climate change. What is to be done? Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. Just one quick question before we embark on the subject. It's insignificant, I think, okay. In terms of importance. But to me, it was interesting. You said when you come out of the underground station, you check your phone. Mm. Do you travel on the underground, Nick?
Not a great deal, but I have done, yeah. I'm not regularly. Oh. No. Occasionally. You're not going to ask me what... Come on, try me. Any station you like. Do you want me to get from? You want me to get from Leicester Square to the bank? I've no idea. I asked the man or woman
Mornington
at the gate.
Mornington Crescent. That's the one that fools everybody.
Mornington Crescent. Oh no, that's got a special place in many people's hearts. Mornington.
Oh,
Crescent.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, what are we going to do about climate change? So occasionally, no, I won't pretend I'm a regular user. No.
Oh, okay.
Limelight.
I wondered if you knew that the mobile phones work on the underground all the time.
What, every single line? Do they?
Yeah.
No, they
don't. They do. It's all been installed.
What? Okay. I was going to, what's it called? The Royal Albert Hall recently, and it wasn't working on... What line serves the Royal Albert Hall? That's just showing me up. Piccadilly, I think. Anyway, on you go, sir. On you go with the point you make with climate change. I didn't know that.
Right. Sure I think we should all be cautiously anxious about climate change, because I'm pretty sure... in fact, I'm 100% sure that it's occurring because of the amount of CO2 that we put in the atmosphere. The greenhouse effect is well understood. And so I think the conclusion is absolutely there, and you can't argue with it, that the more CO2 we put into the atmosphere, it will change the greenhouse effect, which leads to an increase in the Earth's temperature. Not a tremendous amount, but over 1,000 years or so, we may do something such that we... I don't think this is actually going to happen, but maybe... We'll change our environment so much that we can't live here anymore, which will solve the problem.
But how do we do this without frightening the children, lastly, Tony?
What? Just decrease the amount of CO2 that we release. Don't drive so much, walk, run, cycle, that sort of thing. You know, so anything that doesn't have a tremendous impact on your life. But bear in mind that, to my mind, the car is the work of the devil. And, if I could, when I finish my time machine, I'm going to go back and get Henry Ford and bring him forward and show him what he's done.
Tony, you and I are going to have to agreeably disagree or agree to disagree agreeably, because I love cars. I always have done. I mean, honestly, there's some photos of there are some adverts of cars I was looking at just on the weekend. But you and I, Tony, will respect each other's position. And you've led us neatly into the next conversation, because if you have a car or a motorbike, of course, you might be at risk of being one of the almost 500,000 people who have been done for those new 20-mile-an-hour speed limits. Indeed, it's been reported that the total number of tickets is 488,599. This comes as Welsh politicians admitted that they are now reviewing their decision to make it effectively blanket across the whole of Wales, the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit. They came in September 2023. It was met with widespread public opposition. And in Wales, it was the largest petition ever received by the Senate, by their parliament. Separate figures show that the whole of Britain now, roughly over one-sixth of roads have that 20-mile-an-hour speed limit. And I think in some instances it's very, very, very valid, and in others it's not. Rod King, founder and chair of 20s Plenty for Us. What's the drive, of 20s Plenty for Us? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick, and thank you very much for inviting me.
Not at all. What's your drive? What drives 20s Plenty? What are you trying to do?
All that we do is that we respond and help communities who want to make their places better places by having lower speeds on their residential, their high streets, and outside the schools, community places. Generally, the places where people walk, cycle, drive, and use that public space between buildings that we call roads.
Okay. Do you accept that in some instances, some local authorities might have been overzealous, and their roads that used to be 30, which could easily be 30, but they now have the 20 restriction on them?
Well, I think every one of us could probably say there's a particular road with a speed limit that they don't agree with. And yes, there will be differences of opinion, differences in the way local authorities exercise their responsibility to set the right speed limit around the country. So there will be variability, as there is on 30-mile-an-hour, 40-mile-an-hour, and 50-mile-an-hour roads.
Why do you suppose there's such opposition in Wales?
Well, actually, if you look at it, there isn't, right?
It was the largest ever petition received by the Senate.
Yeah, well, when 2 million drivers came out on September the 17th, 2023, and found that there were 20-mile-an-hour limits, but sometimes they weren't signed, then that there was a very much a click-and-share petition against that. But, you know, the government did ask the public in 2024 if there were any roads which the public thought should be set back to 30 miles an hour. And 0.5% of the Welsh population responded naming those roads. And what we see is, whilst Welsh drivers are not necessarily raising their right hands, they are raising their right foot. And because of that reduction in speed, that change in behaviour, 1,000 fewer people have been injured on those Welsh roads.
But I presume the argument could be made another 1,000 if we cut it down to 15 miles an hour. Where does that argument end? I mean, and if we go walking pace, it would be tremendous, wouldn't it?
It's because if you look at the physiology of the human body, then we find that it's pretty well protected. It speeds up to 20 miles an hour. We've been running around this earth for millions of years doing that. But when you get above 20 miles an hour, then that's where impacts at those speeds. You get an exponential increase in the risk of fatality and serious injury. So 20 mile an hour in our urban space is very much a sweet spot in terms of combining both survivability, pleasantness as well, in terms of noise reduction, in terms of just being fueling safer.
Not if you're trying to get somewhere, lastly, Mr. King.
Sorry?
Not if you're trying to get somewhere.
Well,
I used to be able to do it at 30, I now have to do it at 20. It must slow you down.
Well, it sometimes does, in fact.
Well, no, not sometimes does. It always does, doesn't it?
No, in the real
world. Well, respectfully, if I used to be able to go down Teddington Park Road at 30 miles an hour and I now have to go down at 20 miles an hour, that's slowing me down, isn't it?
Okay. It's completely free-flowing. Yes.
Yes, and it is. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Grateful for your time. Rod King, you've been very successful. Thank you. Founder and chair of 20s Plenty for us. Let's see what our first call comes from Wales. Mohammed in Cardiff. Mohammed, would you like to change some of them back if you could? Good morning.
Good morning, man. Of course I would. Yes, I'd like to change to 30. But the question I got is this. We've mentioned these speed cameras that save lives instead of injury. Well, you can still speed through a speed camera and hit someone, where another traffic calm and measure like a speed hump, would slow you down, because you certainly don't want to damage your car, and it has to slow down. But there's no speed cameras on this. So there is the question mine, are they raising revenue by having these cameras that you can still speed through and hurt someone, or are they actually trying to prevent lives, save lives, etc.?
Well, what do you
because
think
my argument is... Go on.
What do you think? I know what I think. What do you think's happening?
I think the argument is then by putting these cameras up, allow people to speed through and catch them and raise revenue.
Yep.
And on the agenda of that, hidden behind that, is let's save lives by slowing people down. But you're not slowing people down, because I can race through at 37 miles an hour and hit someone.
Yep. No, whereas you're absolutely right, or you put a pinch point in or some of those bumps in the road, you're going to lose your, you're going to lose your suspension or lose your wing mirrors. Mohammed, a good point you make. Thank you. It is a cash generator, be in no doubt. Thank you. Safe driving. Natalie in Golders Green. Natalie, what can you tell
me? Hi, good morning. Good morning, Nick. How are you?
All right, thanks, Natalie.
I work for a charity close to your heart, CS, if you know what I'm talking
about.
Yes,
I know it well. Yes, of course. Yeah, yeah.
So, just to say that.
Okay.
I, unfortunately, am about to receive my second lot of 3 points for driving over 20 in a 20.
Right.
Both of the roads where I got done, you actually feel dangerous, like you're driving dangerously if you keep to 20, because you've got everyone behind you wanting to drive faster.
I know, that is annoying. I know.
I mean, I can say the road. Do you want me to say the roads
I'm
talking about?
Yeah, go ahead, yeah.
Well, one is the A41 going from Golders Green towards Finchley Road towards Swiss Cottage.
Right.
And one is a road, it's the road that leads you from Stamford Hill towards Seven Sisters. It's like four lanes on either side. And it's just a money-making thing.
Four lanes on either side? No, it can't be four lanes. That's like a Los Angeles freeway. No.
Three or four, then. Maybe it's three. It's really wide.
Okay. And there's a 20-mile-an-hour on there, is there?
Yeah. Okay. And I also swim in the Ladies' Pond in Kenwood most days, and that road leading up to Kenwood, again, is a 20. I don't think that's wrong being a 20, but I'm the only blinking person keeping it.
Safe driving, Natalie, in your blinking car. Joseph in Islington. Joseph, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Nick. Firstly, you're fantastic. Best journalist in the UK.
Well, I don't think that. You clearly don't read enough newspapers. Anyway, do go on.
Okay, well, I think the two topics that you're discussing today are closely connected. That is the 20 speed limit and the...
Oh, and climate change.
Stealing.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, we have a quick calculation. I think if you take two policemen and put them in crime zones of phone thefts, they'll probably prevent... They'll probably prevent about 10 thefts where they're walking around
I
would say.
Yep, totally
okay,
agree.
Okay, fine. So then you multiply that by 250 days that they work a year, and there you have 2,500 less thefts.
Yep.
And if you multiply that by 20 teams, you have 50,000 less thefts, and you more or less solve the phone theft problem in London. Now, the next question will be, well, where do you get those 40 policemen? Well, you just have them off the teams that are stopping people at going over 20 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm. Or you use them, instead of arresting parents for taking part on a school forum, at Hertfordshire Police, you don't arrest people for that. You actually go out...
Exactly. Exactly right. So you also solve the phone theft, which is a terrible problem. I mean, the phone theft is not only about the phones. It also affects tourism. It affects business.
Yep.
It's a real pandemic.
You're absolutely right. Joseph, thank you very much for your kind words about the show. Really appreciate it. Genuinely really appreciate it. We will return to this conversation. Thanks again, Joseph. Also, in the next hour, we will return to the stories which we started the show, which is arguably one of the biggest shows, one of the big stories in town at the moment, and the show needs to come back to it. In the first hour, I was speaking with the Minister for Border Security and Asylum, Alex Norris. He explained why the government is using the Denmark model to control migration.
We are in this situation where asylum claims are falling across Europe, but in the UK are up considerably. There is something different going on that we have to address.
8:46 now, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The government will set out full details later of its major overhaul of the UK's asylum system. President Trump has changed his mind and backed calls to release government documents about the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. And a couple arrested after criticising their daughter's school in a WhatsApp group say police have paid them £20,000 in damages. LBC weather dry and chilly for most, some light rain for northern Scotland, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. On the M25, anti-clockwise, there are severe delays from Junction 4 for Orpington to the Darford Tunnel after emergency repairs in the right-hand tunnel earlier, but all the lanes are open now. There are queues on the M25 clockwise from Junction 7 for the M23 to Junction 8 for Reigate after an accident earlier. In Islington, there are queues on City Road westbound. It's down to one lane at Upper Street because roadworks are overrunning. It's slow in Greenwich. Pear Tree Way is blocked in both directions, putting Bugsby's Way and the Woolwich Road flyover because of an accident. There's only one Woolwich ferry run. On the Tube, there are now minor delays on the entire Northern Line. That's after a train broke down earlier. And some bus routes in West, North West and South West London are disrupted today. That's because of a strike.
This is LBC.
Ticket, please.
Thank you.
Tickets, please, madam.
Sure, let me just... Oh, this jacket's got so many pockets.
No rush.
Got it on eBay. Vintage. One of a kind.
I just need your ticket, madam.
Couldn't find it anywhere. Then, ta-da! eBay. Total bargain.
That's nice.
Oh, thank you.
But I still need to see your ticket.
Oh, yeah, sure. With great deals on things you love, you can't help but say when it's eBay, things people love.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what Asani should sound like. Go all crisp in with Walkers. Delicious.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helps advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Train to Brighton with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year, every year for career development. Like Juliet, she's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
We'll come back, Sanjeev, Michael, to your calls concerning 20 miles an hour. Just a couple of emails or texts on other subjects. Just sort of start to close them down, although my colleagues may well take them on. We talked about this row between Ricky Gervais and Sir Sadiq Khan about the true level of crime in London. Mike in Crawley, who I always, when pertinent, I remind you, was himself in law enforcement, says, when I was in the police, we had a car crime squad led by a great detective sergeant. They were hugely proactive and were bringing in offenders on a daily basis. He was, as they used to be called, a thief taker. The upshot? Crime figures increased because of the detections and offences taken into consideration. The solution? Disband the squad. Crime figures fell because no one bothered to report offences as the police, quote, did nothing. Now we hear crime figures for London are down. That follows the withdrawal of police from neighbourhoods and the closure of stations. That, as you spell it out, that makes such sense, doesn't it? On the subject of climate change and concerns for children and possible link with drug use, Jim in Bristol, I do worry there's too much brainwashing of children going on. I speak to my nieces and nephews. They're not worried about it so much as they just regurgitate whatever they're told. I asked my nephew what evidence he had, and he just said they tell us at school during science. When I pointed out it was done from models and no one has got close yet and scientists seem unable to do their calculations, in their own words, they've got it wrong as the climate is worse than they thought. Well, that is the worry for young people. But we're going back to the roads, literally. Sanjeev in Hounslow. Sanjeev, have you fallen foul of this 20-mile-an-hour limit? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How you doing?
Good, thank you, sir. What's the story you're going to tell me?
What it is, basically, my wife was coming back from the gym and she was doing a 35 on a 20.
Whoa!
I know.
Wow.
She's always moaning at me, basically, for driving too slow, and then this time she got caught red-handed, basically.
Sorry, she moans at you for driving too slowly?
Yeah, absolutely, because I've got done on the previous occasions and I'm cautious on my driving these days.
Right.
But, going back to her, she was driving back from the gym and you get these police officers hiding in, yep, in little corners.
Yeah.
And basically they pulled her outside my house basically and the officer was a nice guy. He was very apologetic for pulling her over, etc. And he goes,
he was apologetic. She's doing
35
in a 20, your
wife. I know, but he, because maybe my wife came across very nice, etc., and felt that he was just doing his job, and it was just one of those things that he felt wasn't right for him to do that. But
hang on. Did he give her a ticket or did he let her go?
No, he said that yes, because it's recorded on one of his devices that's attached to his uniform.
Yeah.
So because he had it recorded, he had to escalate it. But he did say that he will recommend a speed awareness course.
Right. Okay. Okay.
And then, to our surprise, she's got a letter through the post. She's saying that she basically accepted liability, which was the right thing to do.
Oh God, yeah. Well, yes, of course you can't. Don't mess about with that. That's a world of pain.
But when she had to submit her documents, she had to give her pay, a national insurance number, which was a bit strange when I sort of heard about it. But anyway, to our surprise, she got the summons through the post. And what she received was 5 points, not 3 points, 5 points. And embrace yourself, Nick, she got an £850 fine.
Wow. Oh, my word. Has she slowed down?
Well, she has now, hopefully. But just going back on the fine, it was 100% of her weekly salary. That's what stipulated on the list.
So, I wonder what the maximum. So that's obviously why they wanted to know what your wife earns. And they've taken a week. Now, sorry, is that a week? When she's paid tax?
A week's apparently, according to what they've told us.
And has she paid tax on that, or is that without tax being taken?
I'm not sure. But it was just 100%. But 850 is a bit steep, and they say that it's going towards projects in the local area and all that kind of malarkey.
Well, do you believe that? I don't believe it for a minute.
No, not at all, mate. I know we're drifting off topic, but all the services offered by the council, the community tax, etc. The council tax, etc. All the services have been reduced, and the potholes and all that kind of stuff are increasing, and it will increase going forward with the bad weather.
Probably will. Right, safe driving to you and to your missus. It's quite rare, isn't it, that she blames you for driving too slowly, and now she's got like that 5 points, and that's an eye-watering fine as well. Thank you, Sanjeev. Safe driving to you both. Let's go to Wales, where, of course, a lot of this the story originates from. Michael's in Barry. Michael, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
Your view of the 20-mile-an-hour restrictions.
Well, I'm a bit of a convert, really, because I was part of the petition to keep the 30-mile-an-hour limit and not come down to the 20. I wrote to Keir Starmer, I wrote to Mark Drakeford, expressed my disappointment in the view and the fact that they weren't listening to Welsh people. But, Nick, I got caught last week or 2 weeks ago doing 26 and a 30.
No, you can't be doing 26 and a 30. You mean 26 and a 20?
26 and a 20, yeah. It was a 30.
I mean, I know the Welsh are tough on this, but this is extraordinary. Right, you're going 4 miles below the speed limit. We're going to have you.
No, absolute speeding. No, and to be honest, the village where I live, it's 20 all the way through. There's still, I mean, it should be 20. Even though I was against it and I was furious when it went from 30 to 20, I was caught on a Saturday. But, the speed limit's 24 hours a day, I get it. But, and I am convert, Nick, because the speed people drive through our...
Do you not think, Michael, it can't be universal? This is what I said. So I don't know, if you were doing that past a school or a residential home for elderly people, or whatever it might be. Yeah, but
this is the thing. I was in the area I was generally right, because okay. it's a village. It should be 20 way through. But this morning I drove to work. I drove past two secondary schools and a primary school, and it's 40 because it's a main artery. But because of the geography and the infrastructure available, it's still safe. So I thought
Wales was blanket twin. Obviously not.
And that's the thing, Nick. People think it's blanket. It's not. However, even though I'm a convert, I would say there's a however. Because as one of the, I think the chap, I can't remember his name, the 20s plenty.
Yes, Rod.
People don't know. Yeah. You can petition to have roads returned.
Name's Rod King.
To a sensible speed limit. But people use the motivation of disappointment to complain rather than use the motivation of disappointment to make a change.
And even though, lastly, you've been done at 26 and a 20, you're still a fan, which shows how genuinely you support it, you're still a fan of the idea.
Yeah, only because I mean, I've written to the council before about before to say, you know, the speed through the village is horrendous. Mm. But their response was that they'll take action only when something's happened.
Safe driving, Michael. Thank you. 3 before 9 is the time. Let's get our skates on, as it were. Ha, ha, ha. And do 19 and a half miles an hour. Go stay in Wales. Phil in Pembroke. Phil, your view on it?
I think the 20 mile an hour is fine, really. But I think they should have given a bit more of an incentive for people to back it by increasing the speed on the motorways.
What? Surely you're at 70. I'm sorry, I haven't been to Wales for a long... Well, not driven.
Yeah,
I went by train.
We are in 70, but a lot of the M4 is down to 50 miles an hour.
Oh, is it? What because of roadworks or just because?
No, it's to do with the environment and emissions.
Really? That I didn't know. Right, yeah. Okay. And is that quite rigorously enforced as well?
So average speed checks, I up and down every day in the HDV, and it's dire. We're in the dire anyway because the rugby's bad, but no, it's really bad.
That was a heroic victory on the weekend.
Oh, if you can call it that.
Are you guys coming to Twickenham, or are we coming down to you next year? I think you're coming to us next year, aren't you?
I think we'll just give you the points, if I'm truthfully honest.
Oh, come on, I remember the days when allow us this little bit, this slight period where you are perhaps on the back foot and England are in the ascendancy. It won't last, I'm sure. For look after yourself. Thanks, buddy. Tim and Croyd. Oh, let's do a minute late to the news. Tim, sorry, you're on the radio. You agree with them. Why?
I don't agree with them. No, I've got done 40 in a 20.
You were done doing 40 in a 20?
Yes, and that, like your last quarter, that...
How many points?
That was 6 points and over £1,000 fine.
Right, okay. That's pretty rapid, you know, Tim. 40 and a 20, mate.
Well, I was going up the hill, but I do agree with outside old people's home, schools, hospitals, but there's some roads in Croydon, as for example, there's Oaks Road, there's a footpath, 1 footpath, right. 5 metres off the side.
Tim, if you'd been doing 30, you know, fair, you've doubled the speed limit, mate.
Yes, I do agree. I was going too fast.
Right.
But I do not agree with them in every scenario.
All right. Has it changed your driving habits, Tim?
Well, I have, because I'm soon be looking at 12 points if I'm not careful.
Oh, man, you'd be sure to drive safely. Tim, thank you. At least you're honest. 40 and a 20, there won't be a lot of public sympathy for you there. Thanks for that. Safe driving. What public sympathy for this new idea, the most sweeping changes in migrants and handling of asylum claims in generations? Well, here's what the Conservatives think about it. Shadow Home Secretary Chris Philp.
If they really wanted to fix the illegal migration crisis, the government would follow our advice, follow our plans, come out of the ECHR completely.
Plus, what's it like to experience a premature birth? Princess Beatrice has said it can be, quotes, incredibly lonely. This conversation starts as today is the World Prematurity Day. So if you, as a mum, or of course as the dad, had those hurdles, we'll share that later in the hour. But the 9 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, a major overhaul of the asylum system is set to be announced by the Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood. The application of human rights law will also be changed so those refused asylum can't make multiple appeals.
Opposition parties say the plans will fail, though, unless the UK leaves the European Convention on Human Rights. But speaking to Nick, the Borders Security Minister, Alex Norris, dismissed the claims as rubbish.
The reality is everything that the Home Secretary announces today, which will be a very significant package that I think your listeners will really think is a good one, all of that can be done within our domestic law. Were we to just try and do those route one solutions, tear up agreements with no real idea of why, what they would do actually is remove the basis that much of our return agreements are on, so we're ripping those up and starting again.
Separately, the government is finalising plans for a major ad campaign overseas to discourage people from illegally moving to the UK. LBC understands TV and radio adverts will be rolled out in Middle Eastern and North African countries. There's more on this story on our website at lbc.co.uk. President Trump's changed his mind on the release of files related to the Jeffrey Epstein case. Having previously resisted the move, he now says House Republicans should vote for the documents to be made public. Mr. Trump says we have nothing to hide. His name's already been referenced in some files, but speaking to reporters before boarding Air Force One, he said that's not important.
Well, I don't want to talk about it because fake news like you, you're a terrible reporter, and fake news like you, they just keep bringing that up to deflect from the tremendous success of the Trump administration. So they're using Jeffrey Epstein as a deflection.
A couple arrested after criticising their daughter's school in a WhatsApp group say police have paid them thousands in damages. Rosalind Levine and Maxie Allen were held on suspicion of harassment and malicious communications in January, but the couple say Hertfordshire Police has since admitted liability for wrongful arrest and paid them £20,000 in compensation. The force is yet to comment. And a cold weather health warning has come into force for much of the northern half of England. Snow and ice are possible for summer this week. A clear-up operation is continuing as well in Monmouth after Storm Claudia caused severe flooding over the weekend. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 6 at 97.04. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, dry and chilly for most. Some light rain for northern Scotland, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Driving can often be a bit ordinary. The commute, the weekly shop. But with SEAT, it's never an ordinary drive. Because right now you can get an extra £500 off the SEAT Ibiza and Arona on top of existing offers. Just order by the 15th of December and take delivery by the 31st of December. Search SEAT offers to find out more.
T's and C's and exclusions apply. UK retail customers 18 plus. New stock vehicles only, subject to availability. Saving including VAT applied to on-the-road price.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after nine, Monday, November the 17th. Asylum seekers face a 20-year wait to settle in the UK. States face a visa ban if they won't take back their migrants. They are just some of the headlines. The most sweeping reforms in generations. I'm asking you, will they work? And in other news, it's World Prematurity today. The challenges of having a baby. The challenges of having a premature baby. Princess Beatrice appeared on the Born podcast.
I think so often, especially as mums, we spend our lives, you know, feeling, you know, we have to be perfect to do this. And sometimes when you are faced with that moment of learning that your baby's going to come a bit early, it can be incredibly lonely.
Each year, around 60,000 babies are born prematurely in the UK. That's as high as one in every 13. It would appear the princess has declined to share just how premature her baby was, but the birth weight was around 3 pounds. So if you've had it, that is quite down, isn't it? If you have had a premature baby, the additional challenges, we'll talk about that later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Later today, although they've done a lot as they do these days, all parties, by the way, I'm not critical of this government, the Conservatives did it as well. They like to go on the television and on the radio and tell you on the radio what they're going to do, then tell you what you do, and then come on the radio again and tell you what they've done. It is the way of modern politics, I get it, but we're going to have these sweeping changes. Asylum seekers will be restricted to a single appeal rather than different appeals. There'll be a new body for fast-tracking cases for dangerous criminals. There'll be legislation to restrict last-minute modern slavery claims. They'll join other countries in seeking changes to ECHR, repeat changes as opposed to leaving. and they'll change the Home Office's duty to provide support to asylum seekers to a discretionary power. Those are perhaps the headlines. There's no shortage, by the way, of other measures that have been outlined. But a lot of this tracks back to the extraordinary success they're enjoying with this issue in Denmark. Now, we've spoken before about how Europe used to be the content of voyaging out. And now you see all the explorers from the United Kingdom, from Belgium, from Spain, everywhere else, as they effectively colonised the world. Now it is the continent of destination. Hundreds of millions of people are on the move in this on this planet, millions of whom probably are headed to parts of Europe. So the United Kingdom and Denmark are not alone. But to Denmark, which is where we read the Home Secretary and Labour have taken a lot of guidance. Labour's sister party in Denmark, the centre-left Social Democracy Party, has toughened up their immigration system, with successful asylum claims in the country now at a 40-year low. The government sent officials to Denmark to see how the policies work. So how do they work? Well, there's only one way to find out. LBC's Henry Riley went to Copenhagen this weekend.
They need to adjust to the way of living here in Denmark. Like, if we go to other countries, we're going to adapt to their way of living.
Consistently ranked as one of the happiest countries in the world, Denmark is the birthplace of Hans Christian Andersen, where Lego was first built, Carlsberg first brewed. But it's their approach to migration which has got European leaders talking.
It has become much more accepted that we have a very hardline stance on immigration.
Successful asylum claims here are at a 40-year low, just 860 last year, while applications are down 90% in a decade. The Home Secretary dispatched senior UK government officials to Copenhagen, so we've come to find out if Labour can make gains with the help of the Danes.
Got more under control in the recent years. If there's a good reason for immigrating, there's still a chance to do that.
I think that we should be kinder. I think that we are too harsh on the people who end up in crime.
Denmark's cuddly image may just be a Scandinavian cliche. This country has among the most stringent migration policies on the continent. Nilas Heinskau is the political editor of the Danish broadsheet Politiken.
The Social Democratic Party had a lot of problems losing voters to the Danish People's Party, which is very comparable to Reform UK. They took voters for what would be comparable to Red Wall voters. They made a decision in the Social Democratic Party not to let that happen again.
By tackling migration, Labour's sister party here have mitigated that threat. While successful, aspects have been controversial. We spoke with broadcaster Anne-Sophie Allard.
We said that we would take the jewellery and other valuables off of refugees if they would come, just to pay for their housing. So we also attract negative attention.
For some, it's necessary for integration, but for others, it's discrimination. Nilas Heinskau again.
The ghetto law, which is now being called the parallel society law, where you would have a limit of how many immigrants with non-Western background would be able to live in a certain area, and they tore down buildings.
Just a 10-minute metro from the centre is a sprawling housing estate, Mjørnaparken, one of these parallel societies, and it's worlds away from the city centre. Christian lives here.
It's been transformed. Years ago, it was, you know, a hard area to live. You know, it's been an area with gangs, members, to a much more positive place to be around. It's still a very diverse place to be, which is fantastic.
Officials, though, say the big deterrent is the temporary nature of asylum here. You'll be returned to your home country if it's deemed safe, and only under certain circumstances can you bring family. If they're over 24, they must pass a Danish language test, and the refugee not have claimed benefits for 3 years. 95% of asylum claimants are immediately deported. They're held in immigration removal centres. The largest is the former army barracks, Back, the detention centre. We spoke outside with Rima, a Red Cross volunteer.
There is school there, there is like a nice cafeteria, big cafeteria, they got a lot of options there, so okay. I mean, of course, it's probably different if you live there. There is a children's centre there, so we're going to have activities with them.
By being tough on asylum, the centre-left government here have been allowed to focus on other policies, some political respites, which would be very welcome in Downing Street.
It works because it's of course important to have attention to how do we welcome people into our society? What do they need? How do we want them to be?
Yeah, I think you should try to get a job.
If people want to live in Denmark, they try to learn Danish.
Well, those Danish people obviously to conclude Henry Reilly's report filed from Copenhagen. Now, in the first hour of the show, I spoke with the Minister for Border Security and Asylum, Alex Norris, and I asked him what he made of critics, such as the Conservatives and Reform UK, and it's also worth noting some Labour MPs as well, some of whom have actually put their head above the parapet and have been named and quoted, saying they won't work unless we withdraw from the ECHR or they're watered down.
No, I think that's rubbish, Nick. The reality is everything that the Home Secretary announces today, which will be a very significant package that I think your listeners will really think is a good one, all of that can be done within our domestic law or our domestic application of those international treaties. Were we to just try and do those route one solutions, tear up agreements with no real idea of why, what they would do actually is remove the basis that much of our return agreements are on, so we're ripping those up and starting again. Obviously, other very important things to our security in this country are based on them, and we'd be renegotiating them just to get back to where we are today. So I'm saying let's not go into that phony, you know, kind of line of inquiry, but instead saying let's make the changes that are well within our gift, which are the changes we're announcing today, and that's how we can restore order and control.
How confident are you that the Attorney General, Lord Hermer, will fully support your plans? He has been known to perhaps take a rather different view to this in certain cases in the past, Minister.
I'm totally confident. You know, this is a there is collective agreement across the entire government. You know, we recognise the challenge. We recognise what we need to deliver for the British people on this. You know, everyone is totally committed to the package that we're announcing today.
You say everyone is committed, I'm sure, in your teams, but you can't even say that of your own party. You'll be aware of your colleague Tony Vaughan, who is also a King's Counsel, who's already posted the government needs to, and I quote, think again. How big is the potential revolt within your own ranks, do you imagine, Minister?
Well, I've had a chance to talk to Tony late last week. I know he's got, you know, a lot of experience, a lot of thoughtful contributions. I would gently say he hasn't seen the package yet and colleagues haven't seen the package yet. I think that my colleagues want the same as I want, that they want a system that doesn't fuel organised crime, that people don't make dangerous journeys, that people don't jump the queue ahead of people who genuinely need refuge. I know they see the Britain I do that is a generous, open and tolerant one. I say to them that if we're going to maintain the public's confidence in having that sort of asylum system, we cannot have 30,000 people in hotels, 40,000 people crossing by dangerous boat journeys. That's why we're doing this package.
Well, as I said, you'll hear more from the Home Secretary, but I think she's going to have a battle on her hands. Michael's in Carshalton. What chances do you give this, Michael? Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. Well, I was coming in with a slightly different angle, really.
Oh, go ahead, sir, of course, yes.
We seem to deal a lot with what are called pull factors.
Yep.
When I don't know much about migration and immigration. I don't pretend to be any sort of more of an expert than most of the voting public, which probably puts me in a great position. But when my children were at school, they were educated about both pull factors and push factors. So there were pull factors like the ability to benefit hotels and all the rest of it, where I've offered all these fabled benefits, which I don't know if they're fabled or not. But the push factors were very real, and they seemed to result also in lack of opportunity, as well as everything else that was, you know, sort of oppressing, you know, the oppression, the political oppression, I think, but I don't buy it. The Calais is oppressive, along with a load of other people, I just don't buy it.
You don't, sorry, just to clarify, you don't buy the push factor or you don't buy the pull factor?
I don't
buy either. Sorry, I'm just clarifying.
I don't think the people are coming here from Calais to Dover because Dover's oppressive. So, you know, I think that part of the push factor is false. But I think that what you could do is combine the whole thing and establish a pull factor somewhere else. Like, we keep coming up with Rwanda in conversations. Just imagine a scenario where you, as the UK government, decided it's cheaper to build a university in Rwanda that teaches dentistry and nursing and accommodates people for free. It's quite cheap to build there compared to the UK. And the UK students actually find that they can go there and study free as well. You know, like we used to offer free education to people here. You say you can get there.
Hang on, sir. I think for British people to hear that you get free university education in Kigali, but you don't in Croydon, would not go down, or Carshalton, would not go down that well.
You obviously haven't seen the colleges and universities in Croydon and Carshalton, which which I have. And, you know, there's some very lovely, stunning places in the world which you can go and study there, and you're allowed to stay. I'm not suggesting you bum around there 3 or 4 years, you know, per year. If you don't pass your exam, you're out.
Right.
But what I am suggesting is that the people who get here on dinghy, they're very fit, they're very young, and they're confident to fail.
Yeah,
they're obviously highly motivated, and I doubt that they're stupid, and offered the opportunity of a route to anywhere in the world with the golden ticket of being a qualified dentist. We can't get enough of them. Qualified nurse or a qualified whatever. Okay. And you offered a free accommodation and a free education. And what I'm talking about here is economic. I think it might work out a lot cheaper than accommodating people for ages and trying to, you know, bat away. It's like watching King Canute, government after government trying to deal with the incoming waves of migrants. It's like watching some poor king in the sea on a bench trying to prove it can't hold the sea
boat. Lastly, yesterday the Home Secretary said illegal, and I'm quoting, illegal immigration is tearing Britain apart, so says Shabana Mahmood. Is she right?
Depends who you are and where you live. I used to think that my friends in Ashford were racist until I went there and drove past hotels with ticker tape across and saw people who were obviously, you know, in difficult circumstances. I felt sorry for them. Walking back from shopping centres, and they, you know, they're a different skin colour for a start, which, you know, riles a lot of people. You meet people who are brought from Ukraine and they seem to get a different perception. But Ukraine's a huge country. I mean, there's no need for people in the east of Ukraine to not just go to the west of Ukraine. You know, it's crazy how, you know, that...
Well, they and I would support them. Why should they have to go to the other side of the country if they're happy their side? Michael, we were way late to the news, but I have enjoyed our conversation. Let's focus on that line from the Home Secretary. Illegal immigration is tearing Britain apart. You're part of Britain now. Has it been torn apart? Or is it currently being torn and being tearing apart? Which is it? We'll take your calls on that. We're 9:17 LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, is to announce what she's calling sweeping reforms to the UK's asylum system. The former Prime Minister of Bangladesh, Sheikh Hasina, has been sentenced to death after being convicted of crimes against humanity. And President Trump has changed his mind and backed calls to release government documents about the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. LBC weather, dry and chilly for most, some light rain for northern Scotland, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are severe delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 4 for Orpington to the Dartford Tunnel after emergency repairs earlier. There were also queues on the M25 anti-clockwise because of an accident after Junction 24 for Potter's Bar, where one lane is closed. In Islington, there are queues on City Road westbound to Upper Street because roadworks are overrunning. In Greenwich, Pear Tree Way is blocked in both directions between Bugsby's Way and the Woolwich Road flyover. That's because of an accident. There's only one Woolwich ferry running because of technical problems. On the trains, East Midlands Railway have delayed of up to 20 minutes between St Pancras and Luton after a train broke down. On the Tube, there are minor delays on the Northern and Bakerloo lines, and some bus routes in West, North West and South West London are disrupted today because of a strike.
This is LBC.
Driving can often be a bit ordinary. The commute, the weekly shop. But with SEAT, it's never an ordinary drive. Because right now you can get an extra £500 off the SEAT Ibiza and Arona, on top of existing offers. Just order by the 15th of December and take delivery by the 31st of December. Search SEAT offers to find out more.
T's and C's and exclusions apply. UK retail customers 18 plus. New stock vehicles only. Subject to availability. Saving including VAT applied to on-the-road price.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale is now on, and it doesn't get any better than this, with an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind, with measuring and fitting always included. And word to the window wise. Order now for blinds and curtains fitted in time for Christmas. Book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Waitrose presents 3 for 2 on chilled party food.
Kelly, meet everyone.
Hi, nice to meet you.
8 guests, one host who knows exactly what will bring them together.
Food's ready.
Starring number one king prawn toasts with crispy sesame seeds, soft polar bear bao buns bursting with hoisin veg filling, and meltingly tender Wagyu beef mini pies.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines of stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands, Little Waitrose and Partners and concessions. Cheapest item free.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to you, Ahmed, you'll be the next caller. You've got to admire Shabana Mahmood. I do mean that. For her to say illegal immigration is tearing Britain apart. Very, very brave words. And also, she goes to the point... She points out, here we go, she's the MP for Birmingham Ladywood, and this is her quoting now. My patch, as is her constituency, my patch is 70% non-white, but immigration is causing just as much concern here as it is across other parts of the country. She's not afraid to tell it the way she sees it, but here's the thing, is she right? Ahmed in Hailsham. Is Hailsham being torn apart by illegal immigration? Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, it is.
And yeah. How does that show itself, sir?
Yeah, because of, you know, this hatred towards migrants and attacks and all those hostilities, everything going on. Stricter measures to migration is actually beneficial for migrants, people living in here in Britain, because that can stop, you know, bring down most of this hatred and hostility. At the moment, all these frustrations are coming against migrants is because the migration is uncontrolled for the last 4 or 5 years.
But how does that affect your daily life, sir?
Yes, it is, because, you know, it's putting pressure on everything in the country, you know, for NHS,
okay.
For other public...
So do you think, and I hope you're not, but if you had to, or someone you know had to go to hospital, say, today, you think the A&E, in part, the delay is because of so many people arriving in the country? Is that what you'd say, Ahmed?
Yes, because it definitely put pressure on NHS and GPs, everywhere, and all the public services, because too much people here and too much problems because of that.
Okay.
So that need to be stopped. And the best way is stop offering. I'm not supporting 20 years. Stop offering permanent settlement and British citizenship. That's what I'm advocating for.
I just want to ask you some questions.
The only reform can do that.
You don't have to answer any of the following questions. I'm just interested. Were you born here, sir?
No.
And might I ask where you came from?
India.
And why did you choose to come and settle here, or was it your parents came here?
No, I came with my sponsorship. So the only entry here should be with a sponsorship, with a work visa, who can contribute to the society and to the treasury. If you are not contributing, you shouldn't be allowed here.
But sir, a student is not going to contribute, obviously, he or she is. So are you saying we wouldn't allow students in, because that would destroy half of the university business?
No, students can come here. They can pay their fees after they finish their studies. Okay. They can go back.
So as someone...
They shouldn't be staying here.
Okay, so someone who arrived here legally, and I assume you enjoy the country, which is why you stayed here, and it's a pleasure to speak to you. When you see people making those boat crossings, thousands of people making those illegal crossings, how do you feel towards them?
Yeah, they are, you know, 90% of them are abusing the system.
Yes.
You know, I'm sure that there will be 10% who must be genuine, but 90% who are young adults who are coming here crossing because they want to be here. This is exactly financial migration.
Do you know, lastly, and thank you for being so candid on this, do you know the expression soft touch? Do you know what that means, a soft touch?
No.
Okay. Is it too easy to get into this country? Are people playing us for fools?
Yes, it is too easy, and there are people abusing it. And trust me, the message that is spreading across the world is, you know, you go to Britain, you step on British soil, the government will take care of you.
And how do you know that's that's the message that's spreading around the world, Ahmed?
Yeah, that's why these people are spending their 20 grand, 30 grand, and risking their life crossing with the boats, coming on any other way, because they know that as soon as they touch, they are safe. Government is here to give you accommodation, to give you food, everything. You don't get this in any of other countries. You go to Middle East, the police will come and arrest you. Next hour, you are back in your country in another plane. So British government need to be tough. And I think only reform can do that.
I was just going to say, how interesting. I was going to say, do you think Labour can achieve it? So you don't think it is, Ahmed, and you'd be a reform
This is not tougher enough. It should be tougher than that, yeah. So I think only reform can do that.
Do stay in touch. I've got to go because we want to reflect other stories in the morning. But I did thoroughly enjoy our conversation, Ahmed. Be safe. Look after yourself, sir. And do ring me again. How fascinating, that gentleman coming in from India, but really talking tough about others. It's this idea, isn't it, that it's just not the way we do it in Britain. We're, as I said in a newspaper article, we're very happy to queue. We know queuing. You don't jump the queue. And that's what these people do when they come across on these boats. It's not the British way. All right, more on that to come. But let's come to other matters. Were you aware, I'm afraid I wasn't until this morning, that today is World Prematurity Day, as in premature births. And Princess Beatrice has been opening up about her own experiences. She was speaking with the premature birth research charity Born, and she was on their podcast. And she talked about finding out her child was premature was an isolating experience.
I think so often, especially as mums, we spend our lives, you know, feeling, you know, we have to be perfect to do this. And sometimes when you are faced with that moment of learning that your baby's going to come a bit early, it can be incredibly lonely. And even now, talking to some of the mums who know about my work with Born, they feel this sense of, like, sort of life-changing relief that can come with knowing that there is an organization there that is supporting the research and supporting the questions and asking some of these important questions.
Well, let's give you some background. Beatrice is due to give birth to her second daughter in early spring, but in December received medical advice not to travel long distances. Doctors said to have warned a premature arrival was a possession. She was with the royal family at Sandringham on Christmas Day after changing her plans, and then the baby was born on January the 22nd. We don't have exactly how many weeks premature birth weight in the region of £3, which, if you've been fortunate enough to have children, as I have, you'll know, is a little on the small side. Rachel McGrath chairs the Birth Trauma Association, and you've had premature babies, is that correct? May I call you Rachel? Is that easy? Rachel?
Yes, thank you.
Hi, Rachel. You've been a premature mum, have you?
That's right. I'm mum to babies now who are 12, so no longer babies, but they were born a month prem. My twins arrived a little
They'll early. Always be your babies, Rachel, let's always. Be honest. They'll always be. So I've had two children with my ex-wife, so I've seen the joys and the challenges. The birth weights were £8.6 and £6.12, respectively. I can still remember that to this day. I can even give you their length if it's important to you. So I've seen, what are the additional challenges or hurdles you think come along, Rachel?
Oh, there's an absolute plethora of additional struggles that come with being a premature mum. Initially, you sort of question everything. You look for self-blame. Was it something I did? Could I have done something to cause the prematurity? Could I have done something different? And therefore, it adds to this sense of inadequacy as a mum that comes with being a mum to a premature baby, because your body failed in your perception. It didn't fail, but your perception can be that your body failed you and didn't carry these babies or this baby to term. And then you lose all autonomy over your child and the journey that they're on. In the sense that even to get access to them, to walk into the NICU, you have to ring a doorbell and somebody will allow you in to see your baby. And I know the challenges of seeing people standing around talking, the healthcare professionals. It's not their fault. They're busy people, but you would be waiting in a corridor thinking, I can't get to my baby. And waiting for them to answer the door and let you in, just to gain access to your own child. And so many mums describe the feeling of going into NICU for the first time, looking around and not knowing which is their baby. And that perception of failure to not know which baby is yours is absolutely devastating, because there's this huge mismatch between your introduction to motherhood. We all dream of the bonding, the skin to skin, the whale music, the fairy lights. You know, we want this magic birth experience. And often it's a very grim reality that is completely removed from that. And there's wires, there's alarms, there's panic. And then your baby and you are separated. And you go down to NICU, you don't necessarily know which is your child. And it contributes to this feeling of complete grief because you are missing all of the things that you had dreamed of, that you had imagined. And those memories are ones that you don't ever get back. I didn't give my babies their first bath. I didn't change their nappies. I didn't meet my daughter till she was 3 days old. I didn't meet my son till he was 5 days old. And this idea of, that's because I was very poorly, unfortunately, right. But this idea of instant bond, it's not necessarily the case. And that is devastating because you feel like you've lost that time. And it's time that you know you will never, ever get back.
Just for listeners, NICU is a neonatal intensive care unit, for those who are not aware, which is intensive care unit, obviously, for newborns. So just to clarify on that. So what I'm picking up, Rachel, from you is the emotional impact is, in a sense, as grave, if not more grave, than the physical side of this.
Oh, absolutely. Obviously, there's usually an impact on feeding. Certainly, I know that the nurses started my children. I'd asked for them to be given donor milk, and I had been given medication that was incompatible with breastfeeding, and without consult, my children were started on formula. And that's something that stayed
without
with
your
me.
Consent.
I was not in a position to be able to give consent.
I'm sorry. Oh, right. I'm sorry. Right. Okay.
But the PTSD rates from any length of NICU stay are phenomenal in parents. It doesn't matter whether it's a quick trip or whether it's months and months of a journey. It is, you know, parents report PTSD from being separated from their baby. And there's
this.
A real sense of disconnect then that strikes you because you see the nurses who work with children all day. Now, as a first-time mum, you might not be terribly adept at changing a nappy, and you see this professional doing it. And then when it's your turn to handle this tiny little baby with wires and all of these accoutrements,
yes, you said,
coming
monitors
from,
and goodness.
Capable to do this?
No. Normally we'd have the news. We'll go to news in a minute or two, but this is like a light bulb moment because I hadn't realised just the level of impact. So we'll give you news in a minute or two. Coming back to you, Rachel, I want to choose my words carefully. How long does it take a mother to get over this, to be able to sort of put those experiences more towards the back burner and take on the joys of raising baby?
I mean, time in therapy is a great healer, but I certainly will always bear the ramifications of my NICU journey because I lost that time with my children. I didn't get to see them first. I didn't get to hold them first. All of those firsts are gone. And I never had any more children after the twins. And so that then...
And do you think that was in part because of your experiences with the twins? You didn't have more?
No, we were all... was too poorly after the twins.
I'm sorry, I don't want to cry.
Please don't worry. My story is, that's how I came to do the job that I do.
See. Okay.
I'm so proud of the charity that I work for, the Birth Trauma Association, because we do change lives, because people underestimate. They hear of a NICU birth and family and friends don't understand. Well, baby's here, celebrate. It's like that. You're looking at this fragile creature and you're thinking...
You totally identify with the Princess Beatrice here, don't you, I would imagine?
I identify with every mother who's experienced trauma in any guise because it is devastating and people underestimate greatly the lifelong ramifications from traumatic childbirth.
Thank you for sharing so much. I hope I haven't caused you any distress by asking you those questions. I tell you, I can't remember the last time I've delayed the news this long, unless I've been speaking to the Prime Minister or something. Because I was just learning so much. Best of luck with your twins. Thank you for sharing so much. Rachel McGrath chairs the Birth Trauma Association. Will come to your calls on that, but it is 9:34. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. To the newsroom and the headlines, Dominic Ellis.
An overhaul of the UK's asylum system will be outlined by the Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood later. It'll include changes to how human rights laws are applied to make it easier to deport illegal migrants. The former Prime Minister of Bangladesh, Sheikh Hasina, has been sentenced to death for crimes against humanity. It concludes a months-long trial over her government's deadly crackdown on a student-led uprising last year. And President Trump has changed his mind and backed calls to release government documents about Jeffrey Epstein. He'd previously blocked their publication, but in a surprise U-turn overnight, Mr. Trump says his party has nothing to hide. LBC weather dry and chilly for most, light rain for northern Scotland, a high today of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name was Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, they do say every day should be a school day. I had no idea. What a fascinating woman with whom to speak about this.
Look, we'll come back to the idea. The Home Secretary says illegal immigration is, these are her quotes, is tearing Britain apart, and she points to her own constituency, or she calls it her patch, which is 70% non-white, and I've just spoken with Ahmed in Hailsham. But let's focus on this premature birth, and the birth, I'm sorry, and both the physical and emotional impact. Leshmi in Cardiff. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
My good. Hi, Nick. Nice to speak to you. I am a GP. In a previous life, I was actually a neonatal doctor in St. Thomas's.
Okay, right.
And that was, and then I actually had my baby, ironically, 6.5 weeks premature.
Oh, right.
At the same time as the princess, in terms of my son was born on the 21st of January.
Okay.
And he was 3.7 pounds, I think it is. That's 1.7 kilos.
Okay.
Was
that this year that your baby was born?
No, luckily my boy is 10 now. So flew by, but it was a very different experience. And I think
I've learnt so much from Rachel. Did she speak for you in some ways?
I think so, absolutely. I think because of my medical background, I was much luckier in my understanding of what was going on. So when Rachel was talking about things like, you know, not being able to, you know, hold your baby, I suddenly realised, oh yes, I actually wasn't able to do that either. But I knew that that was going to happen to me because I knew that I had gone into premature sort of labour, obviously. Mm. And I, as soon as it triggered off, my medical brain then went into overdrive, realising, oh, this is all the stuff that's going to happen. But it was, I was kind of looking back at it, thinking of that, oh yeah, actually, no, that is abnormal. And I remember my mom thinking the same thing because she was in the delivery room with me. And I think she thought I was dying because there were about 12 people at the time of my delivery in with me. And I looked around and I said, oh, this is perfectly normal. This is what happens in a premature delivery. And she looked at me and was like, this is not normal. And she was way more freaked out.
You've got two hats here, Leshmi. You've got your mum's hat and you've got your doctor's, your NHS hat. What more from your professional side? Do you think you offer as good as, not you personally, do you think the NHS offers as good a service as it can or it should be doing more?
It offers what it can. Trust me when I say these neonatal units are excellently run. Neonatal nurses are the best that I have come across in terms of helping parent support, but they are incredibly overworked. And I think what Rachel was saying about how, you know, being in these incubators, they require a lot of monitoring. So the medical professionals have a lot to do with the physical aspect of it. And I think I only really realised the emotional aspect of it when I was the mum in the neonatal unit visiting. And I was then talking to the other parents and I was then giving them advice because I knew what was going on and they could tell that I knew what was going on. So they would often come and speak to me afterwards and I'd be like, oh no, this is normal. This is absolutely fine. And I'd end up reassuring them. So I found more of a community speaking with the other parents.
But don't you think that's because of your training?
because you're, I don't want to be rude to other mums, but you have a greater understanding. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. And I think the one thing that I found that the other parents missed or didn't have was time to speak with medical professionals, and that's because they're just short-staffed medical professionals. There aren't enough of them, though.
And lastly, what I found so powerful is that Rachel said she dreamt of that skin-to-skin contact and having the first feed, and indeed the baby's being given formula. Again, something you could identify. And how long does it take mums, do you think, to sort of be able to put that to the back of their memories?
That's very, very different for different people. The ability to give formula is kind of has to be done because as premature babies, your milk doesn't come in.
Yeah,
so your breast milk doesn't come in. So that's the reason why they often end up giving formula or colostrum or whatever they can manage, because it's better than obviously nothing having it at all. And then also don't forget there is donor breast milk as well that can be given for babies. And they do that usually as a matter of recourse over formula. But how long it takes to get over it is very individual. I don't think that
there's not one set figure. Leshmi, again, thank you for sharing so much. Particularly pertinent, as I say, you have two hats to wear in this, both as a mum and the NHS. Alessandra's in Chichester. What's your story, Alessandra? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. My youngest son was born at 3 months early.
Right. Might I ask his birth weight?
He was £3.02.
Oh, probably much like Princess Beatrice's daughter then, I imagine, yeah.
Yeah, his birth weight actually was really good for his gestation, so we had that on our side. Mm-hmm. He was in five different hospitals for neurological input. We were told when he was 3 days old that they thought he had a condition where he would never make it out of hospital and he'd die before he was a year old.
Oh, good Lord.
And so we had an agonising 3 week wait while we waited for those blood results to come back to confirm that.
Oh my God.
And then they came back negative.
Right.
He's now 6 years old. He was in hospital for 10 months on various. He had seven or eight surgeries.
Is he roughly the same size as his schoolmates, or is he perhaps a little bit smaller?
So we held him back a year because he was so premature.
Mm.
And his brother is very tall, but he is on the 95th percentile now for his height.
Right.
Weight is a little bit trickier because he's tube fed. He's still tube fed.
Okay, right. Okay.
How old
is the boy now, did you say?
He's six now.
Six, okay.
And he's in a mainstream setting, managing to go to school 5 days a week.
How fantastic.
It'd be possible. But the trauma is everlasting. I don't think you ever really move on from that.
When you were listening to Rachel 5-6 minutes or so ago, how much did you identify with what she was saying?
So I missed Rachel because I was calling up, but I listened to your last caller and I identified with everything she was saying.
You did.
It's especially when you've had normal child, you do definitely grieve for the loss of.
Yes.
So just bringing your baby home and putting them to bed. I couldn't stay in the hospital with my son because I had a 2-year-old at home.
Months of this, my God.
Yeah, it was, and then COVID happened and he came home because it was too risky for him to be in the hospital any longer. And we had a care package. We had nurses in our house 24 hours a day. So it was really, it shouldn't be sort of overlooked how difficult that is for new parents.
Well, that's what the princess has done. And certainly educated me and possibly educating many others, obviously not you. Best wishes to your sons. Thank you. Anne in Sutton, you had a premature child. Can you remember how many weeks premature and the birth weight? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. So my son was born at 24 weeks.
Oh, wow.
He was 580 grams, so 1.27 pounds.
Wow, that's a bag of sugar.
He was tiny. He was smaller than the palm of my husband's hand.
Oh,
we still got a picture.
Goodness.
The tubes weighed more than he did. I'm actually a GP, and my mum is actually a consultant in neonatal intensive care, but in the States.
Oh, my goodness.
So it was all very emotional. He was born at Queen Charlotte's in Chelsea, and the staff there were amazing. The doctors, the nurses are worth their weight in gold, not just for the medical care, but for the emotional support. They were absolutely incredible. There were times that really broke me, though, and they were so supportive. I remember very vividly the first night of him being in the NICU and me knowing that I've got a son who's in the NICU. And I'm sat in the postnatal ward
listening to babies cry around me with their mums, and I'm there without my baby next to me, and I'm being asked to sort of try and produce colostrum as well. Mm-hmm. And that really sort of, I remember that, the sound of babies crying around me very vividly. But he's had an incredible journey because of the support of all the medical care he's had. He's 8 years old now. Mm-hmm. And he's incredibly smart. He started reading at the age of 3, despite him, when he was born, I remember they did the brain scan and he didn't have, you know, all those like the little curves you have in your brain, like little cell car you have in your brain. He didn't have any of them. It was just smooth.
Right.
And he had 2 brain bleeds. He had 2 holes in his heart.
Oh my God.
His kidneys didn't develop properly at the time. And he's just an absolute miracle. I'm so grateful to the staff and to God for everything.
And lastly, just address the loneliness. When Princess Beatrice talks about the incredible loneliness, again, that's something you can speak of from personal experience, Anne.
Incredibly so. It is so isolating because you want to be there just by your child's side, and other people can't physically even come into the NICU. But all your emotional burden is on your child, and you don't have the energy to speak to other people even sometimes. And it's so difficult because even if people try, you sometimes don't have the mental emotional resilience at that time.
I must leave it there, and we're already way late to the news. I'm learning so much, and best wishes to your family. Thank you. We will come back to the conversation. The Home Secretary is saying illegal immigration is tearing the country apart. Andrew in Essex, yes, it has torn our country apart. Katie in Bushy, when the Home Secretary says illegal immigration is tearing the country apart, the mainstream media go mute. If it were a Reform UK saying it, they get slaughtered and called far right. We'll return to it, I assure you, Katie, and others, after the 9:47 LBC News headlines, read by Dominic Ellis.
A major overhaul of the UK's asylum system will be outlined by the Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood later. The former Prime Minister of Bangladesh, Sheikh Hasina, has been sentenced to death after being convicted of crimes against humanity. And President Trump has changed his mind and backed calls to release documents about the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. LBC weather, dry and chilly for most, light rain for northern Scotland, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are severe delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 4 for Orpington to the Darvard Tunnel after emergency repairs earlier. In Islington, there are queues on City Road westbound to Upper Street because the roadworks are overrunning there. In Greenwich, Pear Tree Way is blocked in both directions between Bugsby's Way and the Woolwich Road flyover because of an accident. There's only one Woolwich ferry running. That's because of technical problems. On the trains, East Midlands Railway had delays of up to 20 minutes between St Pancras and Luton after a train broke down. On the Tube, there are minor delays on the Northern Line after a train broke down earlier. Also on the Northern Line, Angel Station is exit only because the escalators aren't working, and some bus routes in West, North West and South West London are disrupted today because of a strike.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Shabana Mahmood thinks her new immigration policies will make this country safer for people who look like her. Is she right? And why are there so many nursing vacancies?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Booking Hero. On the beach, now does city breaks.
Flippin' heck, we're gonna have to change the name. On the city? Not sure about that.
But you can take your pick from over 50 cities and thousands of hotels. Stop booking around and visit onthebeach.co.uk.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today, and hang on, is that Scrabble tournament in Coach here? Yes, G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour, same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll! The cafe bars in Coach G if you fancy a brew, or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Waitrose presents 3 for 2 on chilled party food.
Kelly, meet everyone.
Hi, nice to meet you.
8 guests, one host who knows exactly what will bring them together.
Food's ready.
Starring number one king prawn toasts with crispy sesame seeds, soft polar bear bao buns bursting with hoisin veg filling, and meltingly tender Wagyu beef mini pies.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines of stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands, Little Waitrose and Partners and concessions. Cheapest item free.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees. Like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
A lot of support for Ahmed the caller, if you are still listening, sir. Mike in Woking, absolutely the attitude of someone who comes, we're here, and he's speaking complete sense. I'm white and I'm British, I work hard, I expect everyone else to do so, to get by. If you need a little help, that's going to be the case for some people, but don't jump the queue, don't expect to be handed something. I expect everyone who comes here to be like Ahmed, work hard, benefit the system and have a good life in this great country. Jane in Camden. Jane, would you agree with that? Good morning.
I do, Nick. Good morning. Great to speak to you again. I mean, if I may, I mean, definitely agree with everything that the last caller said on this topic.
Yes.
And it's a conversation that I've had with people who are of all different faiths, colours, religion. Because the point is that we all have to pay for it, no matter what colour we are.
But how is Camden being, and I use the Home Secretary's words, Camden being torn apart, to put it in the past tense?
Well, so Camden is multicultural, and obviously, you know, we live alongside one another, and we revel on okay. I think that...
Do you enjoy living in multicultural London?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody brings something to the party, but does it mean that I think that we should have open borders with no control?
No.
Absolutely not.
No,
and neither would my friends or the people that I speak to of all different faiths. I think everybody is fed up with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if there are Labour MPs who are thinking of trying to frustrate anything that the government's trying to put through to improve things, they're absolutely mad, because I would consider myself to be very moderate on this topic, but actually even now I'm getting fed up, and I see it more so, Nick, if I may, in the rural areas. I have friends of mine who live in rural areas. They're in the forces, so this kind of segues into what you were talking about in terms of help for veterans.
Yes.
They have lived in military accommodation where there has been mould on the ceilings, you know, the windows have been poor, you know, there's been all sorts of problems, never
of course,
been fixed.
That's not the fault of the people arriving here, by the way. I just want to get that point out there.
It's not, Nick, but let me make the point.
Yep.
But let me make the point. So what has happened under the Conservative government is obviously we've had to take in a lot of Afghan refugees, and that's been obviously because, yes, absolutely, but more so let's just focus on the Afghan, the Ukrainians, absolutely, I totally get, and it's not one rule for one, one rule for the other, because it's based on skin colour. I'm just using this is because this is the knowledge that I have. So basically, the government have gone through a huge expensive refit of all of the military housing. I've seen it myself when I visited friends, a huge refit of military housing.
Mm.
Specifically for these Afghan families. Now, that's not to say that they should be living in mouldy bedrooms
No. You can only spend a pound once. The reality is you can only spend a pound once.
Absolutely. But the rules need to be the same for everyone. And the problem is, it's the optics of it. People see that. People live in these rural areas. Mm. And what they're seeing is that they're seeing people coming from different cultures, different faiths, and on the most part they're very respectful, but on some occasions,
not so much.
When you see them sort of within the community, not so much.
Yeah.
And you know, that that is driving people to, you know, go the way that they're going. And if we carry on like this, we will end up with reform, and that will not be a good outcome for us. I'm sorry.
Jane, thank you. I think all the points you made are very valid. Let's stress, of course, it's not the fault of those people queuing in Calais even today that we have such shocking accommodation for our military. But, as I often say, you can only spend £1 once. Jane, thank you. Look after yourself. Excuse me, look after yourself. That's better. Ali in Slough. Oh, hello, Ali. Trust you well. Morning to you.
Well, good morning, Nick. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. What's the point you want to make?
I think, well, let's start with agreement. You're absolutely right. The government fails people going fighting for this country abroad.
Yep.
And it fails people to stay here and diligently pay their taxes for a civil society.
Totally.
And therefore, this exaggeration and alarmist headlines. By the way, Balfour and Co were saying the same thing about Jews fleeing Eastern Europe 100 years ago. In 1905, Balfour passed the Aliens Act. Mm-hmm. And then as a hypocrite, he turned around 10 years later and gave Palestine away. And Shabana Mahmood, when she was in opposition, was giving it all the big about taking in lots of refugees, as she was about supporting Palestine, coming to power.
She was speaking on the day, Ali, that we had demonstrations in Crowborough and in Inverness about settling people in military barracks. It's not that long ago that we had demonstrations in Epping. That is what surely makes it such a live issue for the Home Secretary.
Yeah, you had the British Band of Brothers, well, run by a tough in 1910 or 15,
Can we not focus on today?
I will. Okay, I'll tell you.
All right,
because the problem is as old as the hills. When you start scapegoating minorities, Europe has a very bad record of scapegoating minorities. It doesn't end well, and most of us in this country are good, decent people.
I totally agree. When she says that being torn apart, why? How is she bear in mind she's from a minority herself. Why is she scapegoating? I don't understand. Join the
dots. I'll explain to you, of course.
Thank you.
Just to give you the middle form, Sajid Javid, Priti Patel, Suna Braverman. How you get the natives to do the work, dirty work, as Chancellor Merz said, of Israel in the Middle East, it's an age-old policy. Use the colour of somebody's skin. Oh, it can't be racist. Look, I said to you before, Nick, Blunt, McCain, and Phoebe were white British. They betrayed England. It's about what's right.
But do you think, and I know that you've mentioned previous Home Secretaries, Mr. Javid and Mr. Braverman, you think their betrayal, it is acts of betrayal?
No, what I think is that they use this as a cover, because it can't possibly be...
But don't they want the country better for you, Ali, and for Ahmed and Hailsham, and for their own families? Isn't that what they would say they're doing? No?
If I explain my point properly, let me even explain it to you. The idea that you get people like Shabana Mahmood to say, well, they can't possibly be anti-immigrants, but no, you look at the merits and substance of policy, not the colour of somebody's skin.
All right. Ali, the line for some reason is getting a bit clicky. I've thoroughly, as ever, enjoyed our conversation. We'll talk again soon. I'm going to give the final minute. Thank you, Ali. Timmy in Dartford. You have a minute. Timmy, your take on being torn up or tearing apart, current tense. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ferrari. On the migration issue, I think that the problem we have is not people coming into the country. I think the problem is with government doing its duties and responsibilities. And I'll give you an example.
Uh-huh.
When you come into this country as an asylum seeker and you get the indefinitely to remain, you automatically get on the benefit ladder. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't be right. Mm-hmm. That's what created this problem. What we should have is a situation where when you come in to seek refuge, if you are granted refuge in this country, then you have to walk your way up to get access to benefit. Government spends approximately £5 million every day. It doesn't make sense. Nowhere.
Oh, on this issue, I see. Sorry, on this issue. Yeah, on accommodation.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. So I think that what we should do is not to scapegoat people coming into this country. I think what we should do is for us to make government accountable to the citizens and for what it is elected to do.
And they would say we have those elections whenever we do, 4 or 5 years, whatever, and that's your opportunity, but others would say differently. Timmy, fantastic points on which to end, but I have to finish there. Apologies. If you miss any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. You can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinions, put your news counters in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. James O'Brien's waiting the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I suppose if you were desperate to find a silver lining, you could argue that at least nobody will be able to pretend anymore that you're not allowed to talk about immigration in this country, given
that many mornings it currently seems, and has done probably since 2015, that we never talk about anything else. But it is significant that the Labour government seems set to move onto territory more ordinarily occupied by rather more right-wing outfits. In fact, Shabana Mahmood's plans look very, very similar to something that Priti Patel tried to introduce 2 or 3 years ago. It didn't work then, but it doesn't mean it won't necessarily work now. But there is one element of her pronouncements that I really want you to tell me your thoughts about.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the government has moved to defend changes to human rights laws as part of a major overhaul of the asylum system. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, will set out a series of changes in the Commons later. They'll include fast-track deportation and limits on appeals. But the Border Security Minister, Alex Norris, has admitted to LBC there's work to do to convince some Labour backbenchers.
I know they see the Britain I do that is a generous, open and tolerant one. I say to them that if we're going to maintain the public's confidence in having that sort of asylum system, we cannot have 30,000 people in hotels, 40,000 people crossing by dangerous boat journeys. That's why we're doing this package. And in doing so, we can open safe and legal routes and have, you know, the system we want.
Separately, LBC has learned the government's preparing a major ad campaign to discourage people from illegally moving to the UK. Newspaper, radio and TV adverts will be rolled out in Middle Eastern and North African countries. There's more on this story on our website at lbc.co.uk. The former Prime Minister of Bangladesh, Sheikh Hasina, has been sentenced to death for crimes against humanity. A trial lasting several months has taken place in her absence after hundreds were killed in a student-led uprising last year. Hasina is thought to be living in exile in India and has refused to recognise the authority of the court. Sky's reporter Neville Lazarus, who is in New Delhi, says she faced multiple charges.
Murder, torture, disappearance, using lethal weapons, also directing the heads of security forces to use choppers and drones to bomb these students protesting against the government in July last year.
Donald Trump has changed his mind to back the release of files surrounding the Jeffrey Epstein case. The president's told his party, "We have nothing to hide." A vote's expected this week. And technology developed for Formula One cars is to be used to try and improve Wi-Fi on trains. Great Western Railway is understood to be running a pilot scheme on some of its routes. It'll use signals from mobile phone masts and low-orbiting satellites to try and create a better connection. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 8 at 96.90. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, dry and chilly for most, some light rain for northern Scotland with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Oh. So, off to my mum's first.
Yeah.
Then your nan's.
Yeah.
Then my cousin's.
Yes.
Then Uncle Paul's.
Yeah.
Then your second cousin twice removed from your dad's second marriage.
I mean, they did send us that card. Wait, who's my second cousin?
Škoda's got you covered this Christmas. With great offers and delivery before the big day on stock vehicles, you can do it all in a new Škoda. Find yours at škoda.co.uk. T's and C's apply. Ask your retailer for offers.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It is 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I just sort of noting that Donald Trump story in the headlines there. I mean, the transparency's off the charts, isn't it? It would appear that Donald Trump himself has now developed Donald Trump derangement syndrome as a consequence of him now calling for the Epstein files to be released. He has changed his mind, we learn. In case you are not paying attention to that story, and I think on this occasion you probably should be. You won't be surprised to learn that all he's done is recognise that he's going to lose. Enough Republicans are going to rebel by voting. He's already fallen out quite violently with the Jewish space laser lady, but enough Republicans are going to rebel by voting to release the files, so he has to pretend before that happens that that's what he wants to happen, so that he can pretend he hasn't been humiliated and rejected by members of his own party. It's so much Trumpology is...
a little bit like Billy Bunter, isn't it? Or a sort of ranting toddler insisting that the opposite of what they claimed 2 seconds ago is now true. But that is the only reason why he is now calling for the files to be released. And then two things will happen, one of which is already underway. There will be attempts to claim that men who had sexual relations with young women and girls aged 15 or thereabouts weren't really doing anything that wrong after all. That's already underway from some Trump loyalists. And the other thing will happen is simultaneously, when embarrassing or shaming things come out in those released documents, the claim that they're not true, reliable, or accurate will reach weapons grade. And as ever, the only question becomes, will he get away with it this time? To which you'd have to be pretty confident to answer no, wouldn't you, given how much he's already got away with before. We may have a little bit more on that subject later in the programme. But we turn our attention, but both necessarily and intriguingly, to a speech that Shabana Mahmood, the Home Secretary, is set to give later today, in which she is going to reprise policies last aired, although it's surprising how many people paid to sort of analyse and unpick this kind of stuff haven't really noticed that most of what she's proposing has already been proposed before by one, if not two, Conservative Home Secretaries. And I want to, if we can, have a grown-up conversation about this. There's a couple of things that depress me, actually, because I think she's right when she suggests that quotes, illegal immigration, end quotes, and I'll explain those quotes to you in a moment, has torn the country apart. You know how many people have become addicted to the outrage economy. You may even have someone in your life. There's an agony aunt in the newspapers today addressing somebody's 73-year-old father who has become addicted to this sort of outrage on these issues that seems to be everywhere at the moment, mostly on social media, but inevitably it has leached into real life as well. And when you read a Labour Home Secretary saying that illegal immigration has torn the country apart, and you realise how lost some of the logic has already become, because what they are describing as illegal immigration is asylum applications, which generally receive, I think the figure is about 90% approval ratings. So you're talking about, quotes, genuine refugees, end quotes, who cannot come via any regular routes, thanks to Tory party policies. And listen, it's 7 minutes after 10, and I am waving a white flag here. What I'm saying is completely true, but I don't think it matters. I don't think it's mattered for some time. I think we may have pinpointed the moment together when we thought it ceased to matter. But when that phrase illegal, which became a noun very quickly, didn't it, rather than an adjective, it became a noun, we started talking about, well, I didn't, but lots of people started talking about illegals, and they conflated asylum seekers with illegal immigrants, because technically it became illegal to cross the channel in a small boat and arrive here irregularly, but it also became the only course of action available for people who wanted to come here for a variety of reasons, most of which history teaches us are to do with familial links and language skills. But again, that's another white flag. It's a sad day for facts when a Labour Party, when a Labour government moves onto this territory. So there are two facts for you there. It is semantics to describe these people as illegal immigrants, because they quickly become legal in 90% of cases when their applications are processed. And the second bit that is simply not true is that people are drawn here rather than other places, where the rates in percentage terms are more or less the same, because we are perceived as being a little bit more generous, or what's the phrase that they use? Soft touch or something like that. Again, it doesn't stand up to scrutiny. I think you get about £9 a week if you're sleeping in a bunk bed in one of these repurposed hotels. But I suppose that's preferable to sleeping under a bridge or sleeping in the kind of conditions that you might be enduring in Calais. So those two white flags are being raised today. I don't know what the plan was when the Tories criminalised asylum seeking. I really don't know whether this is what was supposed to happen, whether they knew that the electoral right